Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's Wednesday, and we're thrilled that you're here. We're 312-981-7200. You were adorable this morning as you wanted to talk about the O.J. Simpson miniseries, and I didn't get to see it, and you didn't want to divulge anything, but I know how it ends.
I know. I feel so stupid because I'm like, did you watch the O.J. movie? Well, there's so much to choose from last night. I wanted to watch that movie from Grace or whatever that you could get video on demand. We were talking to Mike McNamara about it.
Right.
I wanted to watch that. The Hawks were on.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh my God, it's the People versus O.J. Simpson. It's a must watch in my book.
Right. And FX did something smart. They ran it over and over and over again. I DVR'd it. I have not seen it yet. I plan on watching it this weekend. But you were happy with it or unhappy with it?
I got to tell you the truth. I have never seen such horrible acting in my life.
Really? I wonder why. Those are pretty credible actors involved.
I know. That's what I'm confused about. You've got John Travolta playing Robert Shapiro.
Right.
Am I forgetting something, but was Robert Shapiro like a young Liberace?
I don't remember him being a young Liberace.
That's what I got from
this. Is that the way he's portrayed?
Very flamboyant, very... I couldn't get past the eyebrows. I know Shapiro was famous for the eyebrows.
Yeah.
But, and Travolta was good. It was just... I don't remember Robert Shapiro being like that.
It's strange casting.
Cuba really Gooding Jr.
Yeah, not good as O.J. Simpson?
Listen... I forgot about O.J. Simpson being found not guilty and then going to jail for some show in Vegas that he had guns or something.
Right.
O.J. Simpson is a nice-looking man. And I'm not taking away from Cuba Gooding Jr., but it's not O.J. It's watching Cuba Gooding Jr., and he was so over the top.
Was he?
Wouldn't it have been great if they could have gotten O.J.?
O.J. would have done it.
O.J. would have pitched for it.
Yeah, he could have done it. Why not?
Did you see it,
O.J.'s
Steve?
Been in movies. No. It wouldn't be his first movie.
Naked Guns.
Towering Inferno.
Oh, yeah.
It's all his fault. Spoiler alert.
I was scared in Towering Inferno.
Yeah.
That's what this was like a star-studded Towering Inferno,
those
Poseidon Adventure. But seriously, and Schwimmer, have to be honest with you, as Kardashian,
he wasn't good.
Oh,
he was good. Okay, good.
It's... God love you, David Schwimmer, and I know you have ties to Chicago, but when you're the best actor in the star-studded cast...
Oh, you just insulted everybody in that show.
I'm still intrigued and sucked in, and I will watch the other 9 parts. Clark.
Wait a minute. It's 10 parts?
Yeah,
it's 10 parts.
It's a miniseries, my friend.
And when does it become maxi?
It's right. A ten-parter should be a maxi series,
right.
Not a mini series.
Good call.
But the same guy who paced the Bronco Chase is the one who wrote the screenplay. So he said, "Let's go real slow. Let's take our time with this and get 10 episodes out of it."
It's going to conclude during the NBA championship. Is that it?
Right. Yes.
And it's based on the book that was written that I didn't read. But of course, there's advertising for the book to check out
smart.
The story.
That's smart.
I can't remember the guy's name, and my computer doesn't work. So
Sarah Paulson plays Marcia Clark.
She was great.
I always enjoy her, and yeah, I've never seen her bad in anything, so I know she's good.
She's great, and it's interesting to see this whole thing unfold. Malcolm Jamal Warner as AC. Another question I have for y'all: did AC wear a do-rag?
I think he did.
Okay, because I think
he did sometimes.
I've only seen Al Collins in, you know, like a suit or a polo shirt and Dockers.
Right.
But Malcolm Jamal Warner comes in as AC with a do-rag, and that was just, it looked like, hey, it's just a spinoff of The Cosby Show.
For some reason in my head, I am picturing him at some point. I don't know if he wore one constantly. Do they always
have
him in one?
No, it was just when he entered.
Oh, all right. So possibly... Who plays Judge Lancito? Is he in it yet?
He's not in it yet, but I saw the previews for next week. Next week.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is it weekly?
I think it's every week, yeah.
God, why can't they just do it 10 days in a row and get it over
with? Oh, man. Wouldn't that be... Although, when it actually played out, people were glued to their TV every day trying to figure out during the trial what was going to happen.
I am sucked in despite the terrible acting. Debbie, did you watch it?
Yes, and I agree with you. It was awful.
But you're going to watch it, aren't you?
I am. You know, they got me roped in, and I was glued to our TV. When it happened, we were glued to our TV. Like you said, you know, it's like a train wreck. You don't want to watch it, but you get glued into it. But it was awful as O.J. and not even believable at all because O.J. is a big guy. He was a football player. You see him with these other guys, and they're towering over him. John Travolta is taller than him.
Do you think it'd be better if Cuba Gooding Jr. wouldn't keep yelling, "Show me the money," all through this show? Is that holding
all
it back?
All he did was yell.
Did he?
He did. He yelled. And OJ, the persona that you thought of was OJ, he was softer. You know, and charming, and
yeah.
he didn't play it that way up till that night. You didn't want to believe that he did it, and even seeing him, I don't know how they got all the background stuff on him. You know, the personal stuff with him and Kardashian and all of that. But it was just he was yelling and screaming, and I don't think that they would have. You know, I don't think he would have been like that.
It was so over the top.
Was it like
there you go. Yes, it was.
Back with more of the Tom Hartman Show.
Okay, Tom.
We got the Tom Hartman Show.
Tom Hartman is totally over the top as well.
But he can act. He's a good actor. Yeah.
Now, remember, Cuba Gooding Jr., and I say
Cuba. Is it Cuba or Cuba?
I used to say Cuba all the time, and then I saw on Access Hollywood once him railing on the fact that people say his name incorrectly.
Right.
So I guess it's Cuba.
I'm calling him Florida.
Florida Gooding Jr. He's an Academy Award winner.
Not in this. And John Travolta. I mean, Debbie, I remember seeing Robert Shapiro, and seriously, those eyebrows made the man, and he had the dark hair, nice hair, Travolta. If it's yours or a wig, I don't know. But it was he was so flamboyant and so not what I mean, Shapiro was an actor and maybe a smarmy kind of guy, but Travolta's playing it like a young Liberace.
He's playing it over the top too. Yeah, I think that's not believable.
Maybe he's auditioning for another movie about a young Liberace. Is that possible?
He'd get it.
Well, he produced it so he can play
yes.
it how he wants.
Oh,
Travolta,
did he?
You saw that at the very beginning too, Debbie. I forgot to mention that. You know, produced by John Travolta, based on that book.
There were a lot of producers though.
Yeah,
I was surprised at that. Producers and executive producers, but I saw that Travolta produced it, and I'm like, okay, well, that's how. I like John Travolta
Me too.
In certain things.
Sure.
I like him all the time. I really do. And I don't care if he gets, massaged by a masseuse in various spots. I don't care.
But this wasn't a good part for him.
That's too bad. All right, well, I'm glad you're watching it, Debbie. I'm intrigued.
We're sucked in, Debbie, aren't we?
Yeah, you know, they got me sucked into it.
Thank you so much for calling.
I was explaining to my family the other night. Terry already knew, but the girls didn't know. We were watching Grease, and I was telling them about John Travolta. And I said, you know, he got this part on Welcome Back, Kotter, and all of America liked him as Vinnie Barbarino, the sweat hog. And then all of a sudden, he gets 3 movies in 2 years. He gets Carrie, he gets Grease, and he gets Saturday Night Fever. And he goes from being just a guy on a sitcom to the number one star, box office star. And he worked out a deal with James Komack, was the producer of Welcome Back, Kotter, because he didn't want to leave. He said, I love doing the show and I love this, but Hollywood's calling. Let's figure out a way, like an exit strategy, to ease me out of this. He could have just been a jerk and said, I'm out of this. I don't need this. But he stayed for a little bit.
You know why he stayed? And you say, just a sitcom. That sitcom is Vinnie Barbarino. Put him on the front page and the cover of all these Teen Beat magazines.
Sure.
He became a heartthrob.
Oh, yeah.
He was hot.
Think about that year and a half period where he was on the show. He was so popular on the show. And then the movie hits. I mean, really, he was 3 for 3. All 3 of those movies were huge hits and good movies, too.
And Saturday Night Fever was really his breakout role, correct?
Yeah.
Can we take a break and take some more? You have to watch it. Promise me you'll watch it.
I am going to see it. Yeah, this weekend for sure.
I mean, I'm going to watch it. And Jim was watching the Hawks game on the big TV. So I was on the couch on my iPad watching it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop watching it.
Yeah.
But I cannot tell you.
The acting is that bad.
It shocked me,
like
really.
ABC After School Special bad, like that?
It is right
that's
around
right, that's
that.
Like that. All right, I'm sold.
All right, Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Who plays the people in this? Are they good?
No, they're not even good.
Even the people aren't good in this.
The guy who's playing Cato Kaelin is not that good. He's the only one not overacting, which is kind of funny to me, because Cato was a big overactor.
Sure.
His hair's not as good as the real Cato. He does a bunch of flips and... You know, moves his hair back, but it's not as good. Cato had great hair.
I guarantee you the real Cato Kaelin, if his agent calls and says, hey, they're doing this miniseries based on O.J. Simpson, they're looking for a guy to play you. Do you want to play you? I guarantee you, even before the dollar amount is announced, he goes, oh, yeah, I'm in.
Oh, I believe you. They just didn't ask him.
Yeah.
All right, this is Jerry. I take it you watched the first of 10-part miniseries last night.
Yeah, I did.
Were you disappointed?
I was disappointed in that Johnny Cochran. I was hoping they would have Jackie Kyle play Johnny Cochran.
From the Seinfeld show? Was that Greg Morris Jr.? Yeah, a little bit.
He was, and you know, Cochran was another person, Johnny Cochran, who was over the top, and this guy wasn't really over the top. His closet was. Jerry, did you like his closet?
Yeah, that's the one thing. I couldn't find nothing to wear.
Wait, I mean, when Johnny Cochran's closet is the highlight of the first part,
That's weak.
You're still going to watch it, though?
Oh, yeah.
What's wrong with us? All right, well, thank you for calling.
When the acting in anything is universally that bad, the blame goes to the director because they're the one that sets the pace, and a lot of times a director will say to a cast, we're going for a certain tone in this, but why would the tone be overacting? I mean, this is, as you know, this is an incredibly serious and important story, so why sensationalize it any more than it already is? You would think the director's job, if he was doing it right, would be to go, okay, that's way over the top. Let's bring it down a little bit, see what we can do.
The parts of this case are over the top to begin
sure.
with. So let the acting be more subdued to really sell the story.
Wouldn't that be a better play?
Bill,
I'm shocked they didn't do it that way.
You're the film major. You're the film lover. I need you to watch this to help me through it.
I wanted to see. I had tennis last night, and then I watched the rest of the Hawks game, and I wanted to see it, but I guarantee you I will. The fact that it's 10 hours is disturbing to me. It shouldn't be that long, especially if what you say is true with the overacting, because that it's already gotten old for you and you're an episode in.
It's not old. It's still, now it's like become a train wreck that I have to watch 10 episodes because I want to see, you know, how over the top they can go.
Right.
And I believe it's Selma Blair. I'm not 100% sure. You can check this, who plays Kris Jenner. Is that her name?
Or it was Kris
Kardashian at the time.
Jenner. Yeah, that's good. If that's true, that's very good casting. Selma Blair kind of looks like her and has the same kind of attitude as her.
And she, you know, another larger than life figure is Kris Kardashian.
Right.
And Selma Blair playing the role of her. It was believable. It was at Nicole's funeral and she said a word or something. And then there's some blonde next to her who I don't know who that's supposed to be, another friend of Nicole's.
Or maybe Nicole's sister?
Because they were up at the front.
Oh.
They got front seat for the funeral.
Do they show Kris Kardashian, they show the daughters at some point. They'd be really little, right?
They just show.
Do they show them just all the little girls watching NBA games and just like big starry eyes? Oh, this is fantastic! Look at all those players. Do they show
that? Kim has a Walkman on, listening to
a young Kanye West.
They show the little kid, like the. I think we're going to find out more about them as we've heard, as we talked to that ABC News correspondent yesterday.
Yeah.
We'll find the, you know, OJ is to blame for the whole Kardashian thing.
You know what? That's true.
Yeah.
Without him in that trial.
There are no Kardashians.
Robert Kardashian was a well-established lawyer, but it wouldn't have been, he wouldn't have hit the national prominence without that. And then we would have been without the Kardashian family. Darn it.
I know. OJ should be jailed. Extended sentence.
Just for that alone.
I did forget yesterday when we were talking about this with the ABC News correspondent, Nathan, that I forgot that OJ was found innocent. I completely forgot that part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How could I forget the biggest part and then just some weird thing with a gun show in Vegas where he gets arrested?
Well, people said at the time that they're going to be watching him like a hawk, that at some point he's going to mess up in some regard. And I'll never forget him saying at the end of this, when he was found not guilty, that he won't rest until the killer is found. And then he just went golfing and didn't stop golfing.
Well, and that's what is worth seeing. This starts at the murders.
Yeah.
And his reactions are really good. It's good to watch.
Right.
And I want to get into the mind of Marcia Clark, because I didn't realize this as it was going on, but, you know, she's a woman, she's on to prosecute this case, and they couple her with a dude because they don't, her boss, I don't think, can think that a woman can handle this on
Darden,
her own.
Right? Was that?
No, he doesn't. And the guy who plays Christopher Darden,
yeah,
it looks like him, it acts like him, so it must be him.
Didn't he, if I'm remembering this wrong, I apologize, but didn't it come out later that he, Christopher Darden and Marcia Clark, had some sort of a liaison going for a while?
I'm sure, right? We'll see. That's why I have to watch this.
Yeah.
Someone just texted us and said, you know, it is an all-star cast, and John Elway is in it as well.
What's John Elway playing?
He plays the White Bronco. Actually, it's just his teeth that play the White Bronco.
He was way too fast to have played the White Bronco.
Oh, Mr. Ed called. He wants his teeth back.
No. You've taken out Gary Coleman and John Elway in one show. We're only a half hour in. This is amazing.
That's a great tease, isn't it?
That's a good start, yeah. All right, a break. Steve with the news. And then noted pet expert Steve Dale will be by to tell you how your pet should enjoy the Super Bowl. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Ruff, ruff, ruff.
Wendy, you know who's here? It's our pal, noted pet expert Steve Dale.
Hi, noted pet expert.
I am noted.
You are noted.
Steve, duly noted.
We were thinking to ourselves, there's no way in the world that we could connect noted pet expert Steve Dale, a.k.a. you, to O.J. Simpson, but we are incorrect. Tell us why.
Well, years ago, when I was writing for People magazine, I was covering the celebrity beat for People magazine, actually, out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew that I knew about pets, and they said, well, Steve, do you think the Akita could have known who did it?
Now, the explain
a
to
dog
people,
breed.
It's a dog breed, but what is the tie-in exactly with O.J. Simpson?
Oh, gosh. It was somebody's dog that was right there.
Mm-hmm.
Was it O.J.'s dog when it all happened? It was someone's dog. I don't remember. It was too long ago.
Yeah.
But I think it was O.J.'s dog that was right there watching
it. It was
this.
Nicole Brown Simpson's dog.
Okay, thank you. Thank
who
you.
Lived with her, and remember, they had divorced by the time she was killed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was her dog.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I just didn't... But I do remember People magazine asking me about it, and I interviewed. I had to drive to Indiana for the closest Akita breeder. Mm-hmm. I remember interviewing him, and the both of us thought, and I talked to other dog experts, how in the world?
The two others.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So how in the world? So yes, the Akita knows.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, how do you communicate to the Akita? I want to know what you know. And that would be impossible.
Do you guys remember this detail? Because as I looked this up, neighbors testified that they heard barking from Nicole's dog.
Yeah.
And do you remember that the dog's name was Cato?
Yeah.
As I read that, I totally remembered that.
Yeah, I did.
Named after, of course.
Cato Kaelin.
Yeah.
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 That wouldn't have held up in court, though.
Well,
it would have been rough.
But I'm bummed. If there was some way,
yeah,
you know, so... A testimony by dogs, if you will, can hold up in
That's
court.
That's happened. There's precedent for
yeah.
this. Yeah.
So, but not completely different circumstance. In cases of abuse, for example, they show that the dog is abused.
Yeah.
They also do, what are those shows called that do the blood work and all that stuff?
SVU.
Yes. Yeah. All those things.
Criminal Minds.
Yeah. So I can't think of the word that I'm looking for, but they do.
Forensics.
That's the word.
Ding, ding, ding. Wow.
Yes.
The duck did not come down.
Wow.
Crap.
Should have. That was the best round of charades I've ever seen.
I'm very good at it.
That was very impressive.
She read my mind.
Yeah.
But you know what? It is, after all, very light reading.
No.
But nevertheless,
it's a pamphlet.
You did. Yes, not even. It's a caption. But you read it. You read it. So there is forensic evidence that's accepted today in court, and there are experts, animal experts, that do that.
They wouldn't use it in a murder trial, would they? I can't imagine
the
a situation.
Murder of a dog.
Maybe the murder of a dog, but I can't imagine a high-profile murder case that it would come down to the testimony of an Akita.
Today, what they could do that I don't think technically they could do back then, maybe they could, is if someone touched the dog, so if they wanted to know if O.J. was there, they can actually identify by DNA.
Yes, on the dog, you know, because the dog would know him.
Right.
But also, couldn't you tell the dog's reaction? If this is Nicole's dog, you'd think it knew O.J. and had met O.J. And if all of a sudden O.J. Was brought in front of this dog and this dog started acting very violently toward him, because the dog saw what he did and was trying to protect Nicole.
Right.
I don't know.
But would the prosecutor...
We need a judge or...
Would the prosecutor ask the dog the question, or would the prosecutor's dog be called into court to ask the question? Then it gets impossible.
Well, that's the thing. That's actually the problem. I mean, how do you know you're communicating what you think you're communicating to the dog?
Exactly.
And I don't think it would stand up in court. But
and speaking of court, weren't you just in court?
I was. I wasn't. It wasn't exactly court. It was the Village Hall of Lincolnwood. And Lincolnwood, which, of course, is a suburb right north of Chicago, wonderful suburb, where they do some great things, have beautiful parks, incidentally. And, of course, like lots of suburbs, lots and lots of dogs. And some number of years ago, I testified there, actually, unsuccessfully, because what they wanted to do, they did. And that is, they say if your dog is a pit bull and they identify somehow, some way, your dog as a pit bull, that dog is instantly, automatically, it could be a little puppy, deemed dangerous, which means that it has to be kept in a yard. A sign has to be up that we have a dangerous dog. I'm not sure of what all the restrictions are, but there are restrictions, breed-specific restrictions for dogs that are called pit bulls. I say it that way because they're not really pit bulls.
It's a broad span.
Yeah, they have a look, and they are mixed-breed dogs. So their police chief, who was amazing. I mean, he came in with a stack of paperwork. In fact, some of the things that I've written or contributed to, I will say. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was huge. It was that big. It was like, you know, 2 feet high. I mean, and he said, here's the science behind why this idea really is not something we should be doing in Lincolnwood. And while Lincolnwood may have home rule, and I'm no lawyer, there's technicalities, the state of Illinois actually says no breed bans. We're one of the few states in America.
But were they asking for a breed ban as though if you had a pit bull, they would take the dog away? They weren't asking for that.
There were breed-specific restrictions where if you have a pit bull, there's all sorts of, or a dog called a pit bull, all sorts
and
of restrictions.
And a boxer looks like, if a dog is mixed with a boxer, it could really resemble a pit bull, and boxers are sweet.
Of course, you know, and pit bulls are sweet, whatever they are.
It
depends on the dog, but that's true for miniature schnauzers, poodles, the average mutt on the street.
Chihuahuas are the meanest breed ever.
Well, when you talk to, I have one of those, so be careful. But that's the point.
No, I love them, but my Auntie Celia's Chihuahua named Ricky used to bite at our heels every time we went to visit her.
Huh.
Every time. And I mean, it's this big. It's as big as, you know, you could a purse dog.
Yeah.
It's like, why am I scared of you?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. All right.
Well, it does. Those breed bans don't make sense. Lincolnwood now realizes that. They took an informal. I testified. There were a couple of people that did testify, and they took an informal vote. And according to that vote, they say that they are going to overturn, and there will be no breed ban at all or breed restrictions in Lincolnwood. So,
Steve, why Lincolnwood? Have there been a rash of some sort of dog attacks from
people? I don't remember. I mean, this was originally in 2006 or so that they said we need to have this. It was kind of the thing to do
back then. So it's coming to court now.
And what's become a thing to do now is overturn these bans. The state of Ohio, the entire state, had a breed ban up until about, I think it was 2 years ago, and they overturned it. Now, some communities said we still want it, but as a state, they overturned it because what they have found, and I wrote with a veterinary behaviorist an entire position statement on this, essentially, they don't work. I mean, you want to breed ban or respond hoping to make your community safer.
Sure.
And it turns out it doesn't do that. It doesn't do anything.
I think this stemmed from the fact, didn't Lincoln have a dog named Kennedy?
And Kennedy had a dog named Lincoln,
I think that was
everybody knows that.
I didn't know that.
Oh, Steve, everybody knew that.
I did not.
Noted pet expert Steve Dale is here. Do you have any questions or comments or recipes? 312-981-7200. Call us and we'll be right back.
You get it?
Cat scratch fever.
You don't want that, though.
No, nobody wants it.
No.
But you got to be careful, Steve. It'll catch up to you. Noted pet expert Steve Dale is here. He's here to answer all your noted pet questions. 312-981-7200 is our phone
number. I am a rocker.
I guess so.
She is.
I'll be a rocker sitting on a rocker by next year.
Yep.
Speaking of cat scratch fever, let's get a quick question in here from Mary. You got a little kitten?
The little kitten turned 1 year old on January 1st.
Happy birthday.
I know. He's a little wild child.
What's your question?
So I want to know the interval of switching over from kitten food to big boy food?
Great question.
I've read, you know, somewhere like 3 days and then some over a week or...
Gradual change. Yeah, is that true?
Yes. So Wendy just answered your question, really. That's right. Gradual change. So the more gradual you make it, the better it is. But there's no magic formula. So if you're looking for me to say 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, you know, there's no right answer to that. I would take my time, though, if I were you. So I'd say 5 or 7 days at least. Nothing wrong with taking even a week or more.
Okay, so like mixing in maybe a cup to a half a cup or a quarter cup of food?
Just take it slowly. Again, there's no magic formula. Just add in a little more adult food.
Like if you normally give the kitten a cup of food, maybe add a quarter of the adult food and then a
30%,
couple days
30,
later. Yeah.
40%, 50%. Just increase it a bit.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Have fun with your kitty.
Yeah, what's his name?
Oh, we do. He's jumping all over me as we speak.
What's his name, Mary?
Okay, thank you.
What's his name? Your kitty's
name.
None
of your business, Wendy.
His name is Skippy.
Skippy.
Skippy the kid.
Sounds like he is Skippy.
Oh, yeah, the Skippy.
The Yippy Skippy one?
No, I don't remember that, Bill. Do you? You're a commercial god.
No, I don't remember Yippy Skippy. What is that for?
It was just Skippy, and then in the commercial, you know, it talks about bad peanuts.
Oh, from
Skippy peanut butter.
Sure, all right.
Was that Annette Funicello?
No, she was Peter Pan.
Go to Skippy. You know, and
oh, Jif. She was Jif, right? Oh.
Mary, we're just ignoring you now, so maybe I should let you go. Happy birthday, Skippy. Someone else has texted, got a question for you about, could you please ask Steve Dale about dog dental health? I heard a raw diet is better. I just spent nearly $400 on having my toy poodle's teeth cleaned with extractions. Thanks.
And Steve, this is Pet Dental Health Month, so what better time for this question than right now?
Look at you, homework
king. I know some stuff.
That's impressive. I went to get my teeth cleaned yesterday to celebrate.
Yeah.
I mean, we should all celebrate Pet Dental Health Month, which is February. No, a raw food diet is not better for their teeth.
Really?
No. No, I'm not even sure at all that a raw food diet is better. I mean, it's not.
Like
I'm not
raw meat and veggies and stuff like that?
Well, there's two ways to do it. One is to do what you just suggested. There are prepared raw food diets, which is the more common way to do it. But there's no indication in science anywhere I know of in science that it's better at all in any way.
For wild dogs, yeah, because that's what they had.
Yeah, but this is not what our domestic dogs are. So our domestic dogs actually have different needs than, say, wolves do. So those commercials that say, the wolf in your dog. Well, there is no wolf in my dog or your dog.
But they came from the same tree.
Well, we came
sort
from
of,
cavemen.
Yes,
and
yeah.
You know, you don't drag your wife around by her hair.
Not anymore. She hated that.
Well, I don't even know if the cavemen did that. That would be abuse, which is not right.
Yes.
And speaking of abuse, and this is something when I saw in your topics what you wanted to cover, something that New York is doing that Chicago should be doing.
Yeah, so I had the honor of moderating a panel in New York City. They have a new program called UriPals, UIRIPALS. Which simply gives an opportunity for people that have been in domestic abuse situations to flee to a place with their pets. And for the most part, in major cities and, in fact, in smaller cities, these shelters don't allow animals. And the problems,
and so you're not going to want to leave.
That's
it's tough
right.
to leave anyway, but to say, what am I going to do with my pet?
Yes. And what happens is, according to people I've talked to that have been abused, the abuser takes advantage of the fact that they know you love your pet. So they threaten the pet. They sometimes abuse the pet. This gets the pet out of that situation into a safe place as well. One thing they have found out in New York with this amazing program is it helps other people who don't have pets. So they have an opportunity to come up and talk, especially the kids.
Sure.
They will come up and talk to these dogs who are not their dogs and tell them their stories, as people do with dogs, you know, especially kids. But even adults do that. So there's a huge benefit, in fact, it turns out, to have these animals there.
Look up Google, people. You can Google and look a prisoner. A dog was brought into a prisoner cell. And it's a beautiful little video, how touching this is.
I'm not surprised. I mean, dogs touch your heart in a way that we don't even sometimes understand. But this also saves communities money because the dogs would otherwise perhaps end up at a shelter. that costs communities money, mm-hmm. And perhaps would be euthanized. So mm-hmm. it's the humane thing to do, but moreover, it helps those family members, it helps other family members. I don't see a downside to this if it's well-run, well-controlled. There's an alderman in Chicago who's very interested in the homeless and wants to see this happen here, James Kappelman. I credit him for that. And besides, in my opinion, if New York can do it, Chicago can do it better. So we, we need to do this here. And by the way, I need to say hello.
Hello.
Hello, Steve.
Hello.
We've been talking to you for half an hour.
It was weird in the middle of this.
Yeah, now he says hello. What's with that?
Not from me, though. From our elevator company.
Oh.
Jeffrey Elevator loves you guys.
Is this the elevator you were stuck in?
Yes.
And did a show from?
Yes. And our elevator is down at the moment in our building.
Do another show.
I should break in and do a show from there. But they love you, and they're listening right now.
Woof, woof.
We press their buttons, Wendy.
Yes.
that's elevator stuff.
Yeah.
I love the
elevator stuff. I'm impressed with your elevator talk.
All right.
There is the Puppy Bowl that's coming up and the Super Bowl. Which are you going to watch or neither?
I would watch the Super Bowl for the commercials, the Puppy Bowl when the football game is going on. And I will be talking at this time on February 7th, which I guess is there's this game on TV or something.
There's a football game coming up.
If I only would have known, but it's at Narnia Pet Behavior and Training. I'll be talking about misunderstandings that people sometimes have about reading their dogs. And Dr. John Sarabasi, veterinary behaviorist, who I wrote a book called Decoding Your Dog with, he will be speaking about separation anxiety in dogs, which perhaps we're seeing more of. For further information about all of this, by the way, the $50 fee goes to Pet Rescue. It doesn't go to me, and it doesn't go to Dr. Sarabasi. It's info@asoundbeginningprogram.com. info@asoundbeginningprogram.com.
I feel terribly guilty because there are 5 calls and 10 texts that have questions for you, and we are out of time.
Maybe next time I just take phone calls.
You want to do that?
Sure.
We can do that. All right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
How can people reach you or hear you until then?
They could look at my blog, chicagonow.com/Steve Dale, and they could read more about that program we were talking about in New York City as well, and also about what Lincolnwood is doing to change their breed specific restrictions.
Steve, happy Pet Dental Health Month.
Yes!
Don't forget,
woohoo!
Floss.
We should celebrate that at Tooth Hurdy. I can't stop with that joke. I know it's old and stupid and not even funny, but I just Tooth Hurdy.
Sure. That's good fun for everyone. Thank you, Steve.
Well, some of us.
A break, some news,
I'm out of here.
More show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Hannah and Dane from Flavor HD are here. Actually, Dane is here.
What?
Hannah's on assignment, and we say that whenever she's on vacation to make it sound like she's doing something important.
She's in Space Mountain assignment, so she's taken
she's
on
Disney World.
The galactic obligations of the program.
That happens. Hi, Dane. Nice to see you. You have brought a guest, and it's a guest that I know from years and years and years and years ago.
Well, you guys have a special connection that very few people share, although his connection with millions and millions of not only Chicagoland people, but food lovers all around the country is undeniable, right? Of course, check, please. This is the show.
It's been on for a good long time, and it's great.
That has been like highlighting great restaurants and having people share what it is they love about them for so many years, dovetailing with the explosion. Maybe responsible, David, I don't know, for the explosion in the popularity of food. Who knows? But David Manilow is here.
Hey, David. Nice to see you.
Great seeing you.
It's true. When you started Check, Please, there wasn't the proliferation of food on television the way it is now.
They weren't rock stars. Chefs weren't rock stars back then.
Right. What happened in the interim? What happened from the time you guys started it till today, do you think?
Well, Food Network, made stars of a lot of people. And I think also the audience became much more savvy about food. So there's a huge amount of food knowledge out there. If you talk to chefs now, when we started 15 years ago, somebody wouldn't know about, what they were ordering, where it was sourced, mm-hmm. all the different terms. Now there's an enormous amount of food and wine knowledge, cocktail knowledge, all over the city, local farms, where's this coming from? So it's everything's been upgraded.
So 15 years ago was the conversation like, it tastes good, or there were big portions.
I didn't like the service.
And the artwork in presenting food has changed dramatically.
It's unbelievable. I was interviewing somebody the other day. I have an online series called Chat, Please.
Mm-hmm.
So I was interviewing a couple guys a guy from Dark Matter Coffee, which is kind of a progressive coffee place, and the owner of a new restaurant called Band of Bohemia, who used to work at Alinea. And I asked them both, could you have, they're very kind of out there. I said, could you have done what you're doing now 15 years ago? And they're like, absolutely not.
Impossible.
It wasn't ready. I said, so is this the kind of like Alineization, as in the restaurant Alinea?
Yeah.
Did that allow all these things? And they're like, oh, maybe. Because once we became, in addition to a fabulous neighborhood restaurant town and really interesting, smart restaurants, we became kind of an avant-garde restaurant town.
Yeah.
You know, we had Alinea and Moto, Charlie Trotter's, places like that. And so the bar was set really high. And so all these, so people come to Chicago, chefs come to Chicago now. We're a much more innovative restaurant city than a city like New York.
That surprises me.
We can be. We can afford to be. I'm not saying places fail, but you can kind of afford to fail here. You can be Parachute, which is a restaurant on North Elston, and you can be on North Elston. The rents aren't high. Mm-hmm. Where are you doing that in Manhattan? You're not.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a really interesting time to be a restaurateur in Chicago or a chef.
So with what you just said,
yes,
when you were selling this initially, you came to PBS, right,
yeah,
and said, we've got this idea for a show. What was their initial reaction? Because this wasn't,
nice.
As I said, this wasn't common.
So when I went there, I kind of laid out a presentation about the number of restaurants we have in Chicago, the amount of people that go to restaurants, the amount of money they spend on going to restaurants, which is less than it is now, clearly, and how restaurants are kind of water cooler conversation. And so I laid that whole thing out as far as why we should do a show about restaurants. And I said, the reason that a show on restaurant maybe hasn't worked is if you had two hosts a la like Siskel and Ebert back in the day at the movies, whatever, they're known as soon as the third show is on, right? So they're treated differently. So I had this concept of, well, let's have a rotating panel of regular people each recommend their favorite restaurant, and so you could be anonymous, right? And so I said, you know, people love this water cooler conversation. People love talking about restaurants. This is a restaurant still, even though there's a huge amount of like online information about restaurants and TV information about restaurants, word of mouth is still a huge part of it.
It is. And when you can take people that you could put in your living room or in your neighborhood and they're the ones recommending it, what I love about it too is that it's just, it's kind of beautiful in its simplicity, right? It's a show that kind of makes itself. And people, as David mentioned, excited to talk about what they're excited about. So there's a positive thing. They're kind of giving people ideas. There's some downsides now and then, but for the most part, these are restaurants that people love, and these could be your neighbors, you know, so you know it's true.
And a lot of my old friends would tell you I'm very simple. It's like, there's no question about that. But, you know, when we first started the show 15 years ago in 2001, I swear to God, people would stumble in. You know, they just stumble in watching the show. They'd change the channel. And I think they thought that they were like, they just were eavesdropping on somebody. They were like the only people watching. There's a table like right next to them. They're like, huh? You know, and so, you know, it's always been nice because we also try to, I just believe in diversity in every which way. And juxtaposition. So we always try to kind of like maybe showcase some places that you've never heard of. And what happened right from the beginning is we expanded viewers' comfort zones.
Yeah.
They would go to Little Village for the restaurant. They know what to expect. They know what it looks like. Video allows you to do stuff, right?
Yeah.
We always, from the beginning, I said, we're shooting the restaurant when it's active. So it gave them a reason to explore. And so people would go to neighborhoods in Chicago that they've never gone to before.
Honestly, that's their day out. It's like they had a mission, a destination to try something out.
So
very
nice.
Unique.
Yeah, it's good. We've, you know, and we've had a great time, and the restaurant community itself is like awesome.
Oh, of course. Well, yeah.
And outside of just creating television from an economic standpoint, you guys know that I'm good friends with Guy Fieri, who does Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and the impact that those shows have on that restaurant and what they bring in afterwards is huge. And it's the same for Check Please. You know, and David's heard so many stories about how the show is highlighted there. You know, they're doing great things. They've got that endorsement, and it just takes off.
Yeah, and I'll get calls from, you know, like Senegalese couples telling me they can send their kids to college, and it's fabulous. It's great. There's a great American dream aspect and validation, right? These folks, a lot of folks that come to this country or decide to open a restaurant, and now they're put on TV. And sometimes, I was talking about juxtaposition, sometimes we'll have, we'll have Gibson's, and then we'll have a little place you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And so they feel, you know, it's kind of being part of a community And it's something that they're proud of. And, you know, we don't tell guests what to say. They've been recommended. Each guest defends their pick. Mm-hmm. But if the other people, they like them, they don't like them, we're just like, you know, be descriptive, have a good time, be honest.
David, it is the American dream, and yet you're doing versions of this in other countries, aren't you?
Well, I just started one in Vienna.
Really?
Austria, yeah. which was fun to be in Vienna. And I have it in – we've had it in the States. San Francisco, I think it's in its 10th year. Miami, I think, is in 8th year. And Phoenix, we've been in Seattle. We've
you
been in Kansas
You could do it
City.
In Czechoslovakia, but spell Czech differently
I
at the beginning.
I'd love to.
C-H-E-C-H.
We could, absolutely. I was thinking of doing a hospital show called Check Up, Please, but I don't think
I love hospital food.
We could. This is new territory.
There's all kinds of opportunities. But Vienna, they did it in German. I don't speak a word of German.
Oh.
So
nine.
Come on,
you know.
Okay, maybe four words. Schnitzel. It seemed to go pretty well. I don't know what to do.
It's good to be like now, of course, the secret is out that this is a great thing. And this is something people can watch and get involved with. It's been very popular. But to be, you know, on the front end of the cutting edge, buying into and believing in the dream beforehand. But Bill, you were one of those guys when they went to replace Alpina Singh, you know, everybody, 1,000 people applied to do this. But you were one of the early guys on board looking to support the program on day one.
David remembered me when you walked in. You said, we've met before, and you looked familiar, and I knew the name. And then I'm like, I put it all together. But I do remember auditioning for it at the onset, right? The very beginning.
Before we even did a pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what did I ask you? Did we treat you okay?
You treated me very nice. And
Why didn't you hire him?
I'm still waiting for the call. Have you made up your mind yet? Because I got other stuff.
Wendy was telling me that you still like pretend like you're doing the show at your house.
If there's a meeting upstairs, I go, I got to go. There's a Check Please audition I got to go back to.
You know, we were looking for, at the time, you were great.
Oh, thanks.
And
know that, Bill.
But we were looking for somebody that I think had a little bit more restaurant food knowledge.
Yeah.
And so we hired Amanda Puck, who was lovely and fabulous.
She's a great girl.
She's great. She works for Mariano's now. She does a great job for them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she ran Spago here, and she obviously had some restaurant background. Her name was perfectly suited for our show.
Yeah.
And there's a great story actually of her walking down Michigan Avenue in the second year of the show with Wolfgang Puck, and a woman runs up to them and goes, "Oh my God, I love your show." And Wolfgang goes, "Thank you very much." And the woman goes, "Not you, her." Which is like awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah. So it's been a nice run. And we had a fun when we were in auditioning, you're going through the process, right?
Yeah. Well, I kept remembering you saying to me, you can't put horsey sauce on everything, though. Only certain foods lend themselves. More talk with Flavor HD, and David Manilow is here from Check Please. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Dane is here from Flavor HD along with David Manilow. He's one of the guys that came up with the brilliant, brilliant show Check Please over on Channel 11 on PBS. David, I'm sure as somebody as close to food and the food business as you've been for the last decade and a half plus, that's just with dealing with the television show, mm-hmm. you've seen a lot of food trends come and go.
Sure.
What has surprised you the most in the way foods become more and less popular over the time?
We had this, as I mentioned before, a real avant-garde trend, which I think still maintains. There's still a high-end trend of like little restaurants that charge big prices.
Yeah.
You know, L Ideas like on 14th and Western,
yeah.
you know, which you could walk, you walk right by 42 grams, things like that. I think restaurants have gotten smaller physically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I think the 2008 recession changed things a little bit.
It did, didn't it?
They changed, you know, they changed the size and scale. There's also, there's a trend, you know, the guys at, I don't know, you know, the Boca Group, they own Boca, Girl and the Goat, you know, Momotaro, something like that. You know, they've kind of mastered the millennial and a little bit older of like, I need to go to these restaurants.
Yeah.
I need to be a part of this.
Like
I need
status to see symbol kind of thing?
Little status and see, like, it's part of my checklist. I need to go there to see what people are talking about. It's just what it is. And so there's and as I said before, there's just a huge amount of food. There's a cocktail trend. There's a craft brew trend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beer. Yeah, that's exploded.
Really just, popular.
I mean, there's the amazing amount of craft breweries in Chicago and really interesting beers. I was talking to Michael Roper, who owns a place called Hop Leaf, which is in Andersonville, and Hop Leaf is one of the best beer bars, and it always has been in Chicago. And they carry Belgian and stuff like that.
Our millennial producer, Kevin, is nodding his head because he does come in and, hey, have you heard about this new place? Right. So you've been there, Kevin?
Oh, it's not that far from me. I go there all the time. Yeah.
And Hop Leaf is a great beer and mussels, Belgian beer and mussels. But he was telling me that like the local craft beers have kind of replaced the imports, right? Mm-hmm. Because you used to get, even, I mean, Heineken's great, and you'd get all these.
Maybe a Lowenbrau.
Yeah, whatever. But now you have all these local beers, whether they're from here or Michigan or Colorado or pick your spot or Portland.
What's the one everybody talks about, Spotted Cow, that you can only get in Wisconsin or something?
New Glarus. Right.
Yeah.
There's Three Floyds in Indiana. There's, you know, there's Lagunitas, which has a huge facility here, Half Acre.
Right.
There's just, you know, there's an expansion.
Temperance.
Yeah.
One of the really cool things that's happening kind of in the food and restaurant world that isn't necessarily about a food trend is just the buying trend. I've been talking with people over the last couple months about the change from no tipping, and and David got a chance to talk to Nick Kokonis about his new ticketing system, that this could be, I think, the wave for the future for a bunch of restaurants.
Right. Talk.
Talk, right, is the name of it.
Right. Fascinating. It's basically, it's tickets like you would get to a theater or a sporting event. And what it also allows you to do is it allows restaurants to create experiences for you. So you can buy the four-course beer pairing menu if you want at certain places. But, you know, I guess if there's a downside is, for a lot of places, if you can't make it, you're still on the
hook. You're out of money.
Yeah, you're out of hook. Yeah. But, and his rationale is you can't make it to, you know, Broadway and Chicago
That's
show.
It. You swallow the cost of the tickets.
You figure out how to sell it to somebody else, right? But they have that kind of transfer mechanism.
Dane, we wanted to talk about a special involving Check Please. What do we need to know?
If you create, if you're the mastermind of something called Check Please, people ask you to come up with other things, right? Which he's done. He's got Check Please Chef's Choice coming up, a special.
Right. So on February 26th, which is Friday night, we went to nine, I guess, noted Chicago chefs, and we, on camera, had them introduce their favorite kind of little-known restaurant. So we have Grant Achatz from Alinea and Next, and we have Curtis Duffy from Grace, Michael Cornick from MK, Tony Montuano, and, you know, who's James Beard Awarder from Spiaggia, and five more, all introducing kind of the little places that maybe you don't know as well as some of the places that get a lot of publicity.
That's cool.
Yeah, and so on our website, which is the WTTW website, which is wttw.com/checkplease, we'll kind of we'll put up the chefs, and then we'll put up the restaurants, and we'll allow people to kind of match who they think picked which place.
Oh, good idea.
You know what seems weird, though, in the grand scheme of things? Like, if you're on one radio station, you don't talk about someone else on another radio station. Restaurateurs, I imagine, when they were first starting out, wouldn't talk about other restaurants, but these guys and women are so huge right now that it seems like they want to help the little guy.
The restaurant community in Chicago, I think, is really supportive.
Totally unique, too.
Yeah. It's like they don't begrudge anyone's success. You know, it's true.
That's wonderful.
Why
would that be, though?
I think Chicagoans support more than other cities do.
Is that it?
You hear about L.A.
We're nicer.
I just think it's a community. You know, I'm sure there's chefs that don't like other chefs. Yeah. But for the most part, it's a very supportive. And you know, you can really see it, too, is in charitable work. They all band together. Absolutely. And there's no pretense about it. I think they're just solid people that understand that giving back is part of their nature. So, you know, as far as supporting other places, I've only seen positive things.
It was great seeing you again.
Likewise.
It's been a long, long time, David.
15 years.
Every 15 years we get together.
Let's do this.
And I had talked about Loving Hospital food. If you ever do that show, somebody just texted, UCLA Medical Center's food is phenomenal. Okay. If you're ever in L.A., skip those fancy restaurants and head up to the medical center.
I'm right there.
They do a great red jello up there. I
It's Dane from Flavor HD. It's David Manilow from Check Please. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you being here. A quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy. WGN. Wendy, this is, I know this will shock you. Rand Paul is out. Rand Paul no longer running for president.
Can I tell you that is shocking?
Are you shocked by that?
Yeah.
How come? Why are you shocked by Rand Paul pulling out of the presidential race?
He just seemed like he had the wherewithal to keep it going.
He's got the curliest hair of any of the candidates, doesn't he?
Yes.
He's got incredibly curly hair. Now, this is what I bring this up for this reason, and I don't mean to sound jaded by this, but I think sometimes politicians don't tell us the truth.
What?
Sometimes I think that politicians sugarcoat the truth, and I will use this as an example. A few days ago, after the primaries there, after the caucuses in Iowa, you had two candidates pull out. You had Martin O'Malley on the Democratic side. You had Mike Huckabee on the Republican side. They both used the same word in announcing that they were no longer running for president, and that is that they are suspending
their
candidacy,
oh, okay.
their campaign. They're suspending it. I will now tell you from Rand Paul, here's the headline, Rand Paul is suspending his presidential campaign.
Was it bad to him? Is that why
yes.
he's suspending it?
It has to stay
with or
after.
Without pay?
Without pay.
Yeah, because he has no money left.
He doesn't. Let me read to you the definition. This is according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary. It's right there online of what the word suspend means. It means to temporarily debar for a privilege of office or function. Again, I use the word temporarily. The second meaning is to cause or to stop temporarily. The third is to set aside or make temporarily inoperative.
He's only 53, Bill. Temporarily for this year, he's done.
Yeah, but what bothers me is because it's the flowery language of politics, they can never use a word like quit or abandon. They have to say temporarily as if to suggest that at some point it'll make more sense to come back and continue their campaigns, but they never do.
Huckabee came back.
Well, he came back in other elections, but you've never seen a guy who temporarily suspends their campaign.
But you can't go up there and say, I quit or
I. But that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but it sounds terrible.
I don't.
All the supporters, all the people that supported them, it's like, I can't quit you, babe. I'm quitting you.
I wish they knew how to quit us.
And you know what I find also that's really funny is
what?
How, you know, they badmouth the other candidates, and then when they quit, then they have all this love for whoever
sure.
they decide to endorse and throw their
sure.
their voters their way.
Right. Isn't
it's all
that,
a crock of crap.
It's all a crock of crap, Wendy. That's what it is. But do you follow me, I hope, in that the reason so many of us are, myself included, are distrusting of politics is because they can never come right out and say the truth. These guys are not coming back. Rand Paul is not going to, he says he's suspending his campaign. He's not going to pick it up again. He's not running
not
for the president.
Not this time.
I know, but it's so open-ended.
Well, I'm sure he'll be back.
All right, but let's use Martin O'Malley as
he'll never be back.
To your point. He said the other day he's suspending his campaign. Now, he just got 0% of the votes. He got less than 1% of the votes in Iowa. He's not going to come back in 4 years or 8 years or 12 years. This is a guy who tried it and realized America doesn't want his brand of politics.
But you see, what's different between you and me and politicians
yeah.
is, okay, maybe timing is everything. Maybe they don't like me now, but someday they will like me.
But with that said, wouldn't you respect the guy more? And I know you have to be very careful in the language you use in politics, but I would respect the guy more who went up there and just shook his head and went, whoa, this was not for me. I really thought I had a chance to be the president. Like Chris Christie got a couple thousand votes in Iowa. I would respect him so much more if when he does decide at some point he's not going to win, instead of using the word suspend, if he went up there and just went, boy, was I wrong. I thought I had a chance, but I don't stand any kind of a chance.
I don't know, because the people that back these candidates, I think they would be, they don't want a quitter. It would make them feel bad look bad.
I know.
That I supported a loser. I mean, Martin O'Malley should have just gone up there and put the L sign on his head.
Wouldn't you have respected him more?
No, I would have said.
He would have said, hey, guess who I am? I'm me. I didn't win. I got almost no votes.
We got a couple calls on this, and I accidentally dropped one of them.
But, yeah, I was going to go to that.
Yeah,
was it Kevin?
It was Kevin. It was good. He was talking about how, because of the language involved in describing suspended versus quit, you can still get campaign contributions when you're suspending your campaign.
So, but what good will it do Rand Paul or Mike Huckabee or Martin O'Malley?
You don't think they're going to be back in future elections? Huckabee probably not.
Maybe in future elections, but let's focus on the task at hand, which is this election. When you say the word suspend, and I know it's subliminal, I know it's their way of saying to people who worked for them or voters or supporters, gave it my all, didn't happen this time, might happen in the future, but it's not going to happen here. Don't say suspend. You're not suspending. As I read the definition from Merriam-Webster, and it's in anywhere you find the definition of the word suspend, they use the word temporarily. It's not temporarily. they're not coming back for this election.
Well, not for this election. And I think that's what they mean, where they're suspending it at this time in their political career.
But if you were any of the three guys that I just mentioned, if you were Martin O'Malley, if you were Rand Paul, if you were Mike Huckabee, and you saw the way America reacted to you, America didn't want any of those three guys to be presidents. So how goofy would they have to be? And I know Huckabee, this was his third go-around. At some point, don't you just go, boy, this is not meant to be. How much time and effort and money do I have to spend to learn that?
Again, the egos of politicians are way different than yours and mine.
There's that.
I mean, you know.
There is that.
When I ran for class president,
would you have suspended your campaign at some point?
Bill, it was freshman year. I had done student council in junior high. I thought this would be cool to be class president. I had blown my knee out doing long jumping the first week of freshman year. So I had this giant soft cast on with crutches. I get up there to do my speech. I don't even know why I want to be class president. It's just that's what I knew from junior high.
Yeah.
But what do you really do? So I got up there and said, you know, you might even say I'll break a leg for you.
Oh, about that.
I mean, it was stupid. I didn't do anything. I would go where the float was being built for the homecoming parade, and I probably had beer somewhere in my backpack and said, oh, how's the work going? Okay, I'm going to go to a party. I was terrible.
Was this was in high school?
This was freshman year, and then senior year I ran again, too.
Did you?
And now everybody gets on my back to do our 10, 20, 30, 50-year reunions.
Right.
I'm done. I'm suspending my
campaign. Are you suspending your campaign?
And I'll never be back from that suspension.
When I was in grade school at St. Damien's School, a bunch of my friends were running for class president. I didn't want to be class president. What kind of a president?
Again, what do you even
what would
do?
You don't do anything. You have meetings and nothing gets done.
I tried to get a vending machine at the school.
Did you try? All right. Well, I give you credit for trying. So a bunch of my friends were running, so I'm like, I should run. This would be fun to run. So we're all sitting. Our speeches were being made in the church there at St. Damien. So much for separation of church and state. And everybody was making their campaign speeches. And I'm sitting there, and I had a speech. I worked on a speech for like 3 weeks. I worked on a speech. And I'm watching all these kids promise things that they can't promise. Because they're just going to be the eighth grade class president. They're not going to get anything really done. They're not. So I just went, all right, I'm going to play off of that. So I went up there totally off my speech, and I just said, you guys like root beer? Everybody likes root beer. So they all applauded. Yeah, we love root beer. I go, if I'm class president, you guys get free root beer. No limits. Bring your cup up. You want root beer? You got root beer. Do you not like school on Fridays? I don't either. Guess what? I'm class president. We don't have school on Fridays.
No wonder you didn't win. They
People
knew
are
you were
cheering
lying.
And applauding. And I know, but my point was just because all the other kids were lying too. They were telling all these things that they were going to get done, but they weren't going to get that stuff done.
Well, they didn't come up. I mean, I guess we did, and it wasn't just me. I mean, we had teachers in charge of the student council.
Right.
But, you know, you did charitable things. You did food drives. You did things. It's a goofy thing. I still don't even know. I hate politics. I have no idea why I wanted to be it. I know.
I'm a political outsider. You should have been the first political outsider. Because now they're all, you've seen this, right? Everybody on the Republican side and the Democratic side, they're all pushing to be the outsider. They want to be America's outsider. But these are mostly career politicians. It's impossible for them to be outsiders.
And Rand Paul, I just have a problem. I'm like, what kind of name is Rand? It's short for Randall.
Randall, yeah.
And I guess it's way cooler than, hi, I'm Randall, your president.
Right.
You know?
Although that does sound like a class president.
Yeah, that's
Who
true.
Who won? Randall? I'm
Randall
not surprised.
Randall ran against me. Didn't win.
Nope.
I broke a leg for you.
That's God. Such a great campaign slogan.
It's so stupid.
Somebody's going to steal that from you. All right. A quick break. More of your thoughts. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
You are literally mad about some literal jargon.
I am literally mad. Rand Paul is, quote unquote, suspending his campaign. He's the third candidate in the last couple of days. On Monday, after they didn't do too well at the Iowa caucuses, we learned that Mike O'Malley on the Republican side, and then it's Martin O'Malley on the Democratic side.
It's
Mike Huckabee. Mike O'Malley is a comedian and
an
actor.
Oh, that's right.
He is also suspending his campaign. It didn't sound right as I was saying. I'm like, wait, that's not right. It's Martin O'Malley on
that's
the Democratic
exactly
side.
That's exactly why he's suspending his campaign, because nobody could remember
nobody
his name.
Nobody knew his name. So they're the third candidates now with Rand Paul, the third candidates to quote-unquote suspend their campaign. And the wording of it bothers me because they're not going to pick it back up.
All right. Well, it's funny. We've been getting some texts. Most of them, well, one person agrees with you that you're bothered by this.
That's about my average.
And I guess last year, the Washington Examiner examined just this because the question was, suspend implies something temporary.
Yeah.
Does this mean these candidates might want to jump back in?
My point exactly.
And the Washington Examiner says, no, legally suspending a campaign means nothing to the Federal Election Commission, but eventually a candidate has to formally terminate his campaign with the FEC. Before that, it needs to finish paying staff salaries, wind down any leases, and pay off the debt. You can't turn these things off. It's not like a light switch. Center for Competitive Politics President David Keating told the Washington Examiner, you have people on the payroll, you have payroll taxes to deposit with the IRS and so on and so forth. These things take a while to wind down. So when they say suspend, for all intents and purposes, the campaign's over. Why not just say that instead of using suspend?
Right.
Because at this point, it has legal significance, as some of our listeners suggested. But they're pretty rare and not that common right now. For some, there may be a faint hope of an unexpected surge of support or other candidates flaming out. Which, see, now, what if, like, something happened to Donald Trump? What if he got choked by his hair on a windy day?
If that happened, I can't imagine a scenario where Huckabee would all of a sudden become anywhere near a front runner.
But don't you want to leave your options open?
I guess so. It just seems so unrealistic.
In summary, candidates suspend their campaigns because they still need to tie up their loose ends. Like trains, campaigns are large operations that cannot just stop on a dime. They take some time to close down. Mm-hmm. That's why they say suspend their campaign. This is according to the Washington Examiner.
I just think it's, I don't even call suspenders suspenders. I call them quitters. I just think it's a flowery way of saying, boy, did I make a mistake with this. I don't stand any kind of a chance. So we'll put things off for just a little bit, and we'll see what happens down the road.
You got to lighten
up. Because they never come back. And I know you say they do in other elections, but that's 4 or 8 or 12 years from now.
But doesn't this shut you up for a minute when you hear they have to tie up the loose ends? You're becoming a bitter old woman.
I'm not a bitter old woman. I'm not. But I always hear stories about campaigns where after they do pull out, that they still don't pay off their bills. They're still waiting. You know, if you run a local TV station, you've been running their ads, like in Iowa, all these guys bought tons of ads. You always hear the TV stations complaining months and months later, hey, we still didn't get paid for that guy. He still didn't pay us.
Where do you hear these things? Who's your internal memo?
These guys come forward
connection.
All the time and talk about this.
Really?
That the winners tend to pay off because they won, but the losers, they're still waiting.
Yeah, because they're out of money. Bills. That's why they have to suspend their campaign.
I know.
Do you have to label everything?
Yeah.
We're suspending everything our show between noon and one. We're not quitting.
Everything. No, I'm suspending it. one more quick note from politics. Donald Trump came out the other day when he came in second to Ted Cruz, and we were all talking about how polite he was.
We wondered
hospitable.
What was wrong.
Something's wrong, right? Well, the tide has changed just a little bit.
Back to normal?
Real estate mogul Donald Trump accused Ted Cruz of fraud on Wednesday, claiming that the Texas senator stole the Iowa caucuses and arguing that either a new election should take place or Cruz's results should be nullified.
The weird thing is Amy Schumer then stole it from him.
Right. Just moments later. Here's a tweet from Donald Trump. Ted Cruz didn't win Iowa. He stole it, says Donald Trump. This is why all the polls were so bad and why he got far more votes than anticipated. Bad! Exclamation point.
What does that even mean? If you say you stole the show, it means you were the best. You didn't literally steal it.
I know.
What is going on?
Trump, who placed second to Cruz in the Hawkeye State, unleashed a barrage of tweets attacking Cruz for playing dirty in Iowa because one of the senator's staffers falsely told Iowa caucus goers that retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson planned to quit the race. Cruz later apologized for his staffer's actions. Now, that I heard from several sources, that somebody on Team Trump was going around saying that. So that may have influenced a vote or two.
All right, well, the sore loser moniker's coming back now.
Didn't take long.
No, it took, what, one day and half a day?
It took a half a day. The GOP businessman, that's Donald Trump, also slammed Cruz for sending out shady mailers claiming that Iowans faced a voting violation. Now, this is something that they were examining all the way on Monday. It was the legality of that. This is what Trump said about that in another tweet. Based on the fraud committed by Senator Ted Cruz during the Iowa caucus, either a new election should take place or Cruz's results should be nullified. It says, now this is according to Huffington Post, Trump is a master at sucking the oxygen out of the race by drawing attention to himself. I didn't notice that, did you?
The anti-gas Twitter, mask.
The Twitter rant is just one more example of this media strategy, particularly at a time when Cruz and Senator Marco Rubio are basking in the glow of their performances in Iowa. So I knew at some point, despite him being so nice and gracious, I'm like, well, how long can that last? That's not the Donald Trump that America has become smitten with. That's going to change.
It's not his character to be nice. It isn't.
No.
And you know what? He didn't win, and Ted Cruz did, because as we heard from Ro and Anna when they were out at their first caucus, and you always remember your first caucus.
You always remember your first caucus.
Donald Trump did not press the flesh. He
right.
did not go out and meet the people.
Right.
I know you think that doesn't matter. If I go and meet a person, and I'm iffy between two candidates, and I go shake one of their hands, and they seem very nice to me, that might sway my vote.
But look at a guy, Ted Cruz, and I'm not the first guy to mention this, is creepy. He's just creepy. Like, if I met him, even if I was on the fence, I'd walk away going, bleh. Wouldn't you with Ted
no.
Cruz? You wouldn't?
I've never run across a candidate where the pundits and other politicians are so willing to say, this guy's just not likable.
Right.
I mean, they just come out and
right.
say,
everybody,
you know, people don't like this guy.
I know.
I mean, his coworkers and things. I've never seen that before.
His history, I mean, it's now famous. His college roommate who went on and on and on about, of all the people he's ever met, Ted Cruz is the strangest guy and stuff like that. You're having a hard time finding a half a dozen people to say, yeah, I know Ted Cruz. We've been friends for years. They just can't find guys like that.
It's a very unusual thing.
Isn't it?
I mean, Dick Durbin was on with Cochran. And he, you know, Durbin's a Democrat, Cruz is a Republican.
Right.
But for Senator Durbin to say, yeah, he can count on one hand the number of friends he has in the Senate. You just don't, it's...
They keep saying lone wolf, that these
right.
guys tend to congregate. And anytime these congregations happen, Ted Cruz is over there. He's not with the other guys.
Yeah, well, that could be me too, though.
Could be. All right, let's suspend our show for just a little bit. We may pick it up at some point. Steve will tell you what he has next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. Hi, everybody. Part two of us, Bill and Wendy. Listen in. I think you'll enjoy what you hear. We're through in 2-981-7200.
I got something that's very bizarre.
What happened?
I went to Dylan's Candy Bar for the lunch break because I had a hankering for chocolate. I'm not a big chocolate lover, but every once in a while, I have to get chocolate. And I thought I would wow you guys with this candy that they make exclusive to Dylan's Candy Bar. It's called OMGs.
They are pretty good. I'm not going to argue with you. They're very tasty.
I asked the cute little girl who was working there what was in it. Because I said, she goes, can I help you find something? I said, nope, going right to these OMGs. Mm-hmm. She goes, oh, aren't they great? And I said, yeah. And I said, do you know what's in them? She goes, no. That wasn't very helpful.
It's best not to know sometimes.
But could you decipher it once you ate it? Or
yeah.
you didn't buy them?
No, I bought them. I spent my paycheck buying some chocolate-covered almonds.
They're pricey over there. It's high-end candy.
It's pretty good chocolate, though.
Yeah.
It's high-end, but you know what? When I go in there, I just scoop up like the gummy bears and all that really bad, just sugary,
sure.
terrible candy. That's my favorite stuff.
Right.
That's usually what I go for, the non-chocolate, and Kevin was very disappointed that I didn't bring back gummy bears.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I appreciate the sentiment and the move, but yeah, I'm a gummy guy.
How do you like not like nuts?
I do. I mean, I'll eat like peanuts, but I don't know. It's not my first choice.
They wouldn't eat chocolate-covered almonds, Kim. What
really?
I mean, what?
I'll bring them up here. We'll eat them.
I'll send them. There's not that many for $15.
But I'm a good, you know, anything for a good Sour Patch Kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love the sour.
And hot tamales.
Too hot.
Isn't it funny that we, parents in brackets, would eat candy like the ones you're describing and Kim is describing, but I don't remember my mom ever just sitting there with a box of Nerds or anything like that.
They didn't make them then, did they?
No, but nothing similar. Like, my mom would have...
They had crappy candy when they were growing up.
Yeah.
The
my
butterscotch.
Mom liked chocolate-covered orange peels. How
oh,
gross
yeah.
is that?
I remember those.
She still loves those things. Ugh.
That's gross.
Horrible.
Well, I have. You've been in the Dylan's Candy Bar, Kim, right?
Oh, yeah, on more than one occasion.
This is the store that's owned by Dylan Lauren, the daughter of Ralph Lauren, right?
Really?
Yeah.
It's funny you say Dylan Lauren and Ralph
Well,
Lauren.
They say their names differently. They pronounce
Is
their names.
Is it just the way it flows?
No, they say Ralph Lauren was Ralph Lauren, but somebody at some point said to him, your clothes will sell better if it's Ralph Lauren. It sounds more continental. So that's kind of the route he's taken. But then Dylan goes back to the old pronunciation, just Lauren.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
There's
it's like Stan and Yash Shmangi on SCTV. They would say their names differently.
Lauren Loren was not really their name to begin with either.
Right. I imagine not.
There's a guy from Vanilla Fudge called Carmen Appice, and he's a drummer. Mm-hmm. And he has a brother with the same last name, but he pronounces it Appice.
Yeah.
You've got to pick one.
The family needs to sit down and pick a pronunciation.
You totally have to do that.
I know.
They're doing like this big drum fest, too, at the Arcata Theater, which I might have to go to. But anyway, so I'm at Dylan's Candy Bar, and there are a lot of kids in there. Specifically today, there were some high school kids, and as I'm waiting by the front register...
Kids have no business in a candy store, by the way. What's with that?
I don't know, but this cute little blonde just kind of looks at me, and she goes, "I'm here with school today." And I said, "Oh, great school. What school?"
She just approached you with that little bit of knowledge? All right, good.
And then I noticed she was giggling and pointing at this display right by the register. Mm-hmm. So it caught my eye. And
ouch.
OMG, which I ordered for $15 a pound. There was a kiosk, if you will, a small one, a display, I should say. It wasn't really a kiosk. Yeah. It wasn't manned.
Yeah.
But there were gifts for men and women, and I saw the candy posing pouch.
I don't know what that is. What's a candy posing pouch?
It was a G-string made out of all candy. Right there for everyone to see.
They and make then, a G-string that's just made of candy?
Well, there's another... See, I don't really get it.
Who's the audience maybe for
that?
Is
that like the Bachelorette section? Well, see, maybe it's their Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's
sure
gotta
that's
be.
It, but, I mean, don't you think kids come into the store?
It's yeah, right it's a candy store.
You can go in there right now and look at it.
All right.
And here's what confused me. They had a candy bra.
Yes.
And it is for Valentine's Day. Kim, sure. You're right. You're smarter than I am.
Other times of the year, you couldn't get away with
year
that.
Year round, my friend.
But on Valentine's Day, everyone's going to wear those.
A gummy bra.
Well, during wedding season, you have to have those for all the bachelorette parties.
Yeah. Right.
And your grandma's 90th birthday.
That's in September for my grandmother. That's kind
will
of a scary
you get
thought.
Her one?
I will. She'd, honest to God, wear it. Oh. And I'm not even kidding.
And wouldn't she laugh? And I mean,
oh, she would think it's absolutely hysterical.
My only thought is it gets pretty warm in September. That might not go well with a gummy bra.
Why? They don't melt. It's gelatinous.
A little gooey.
All right. And there are panties, too.
There are. Of course there are.
That was terrible. But here's my question to you, the men of the show.
Uh-huh.
Kim, you may have this question, too. She's gone. She bailed. She's going to get their bra for her
grandma. If I were Kim, I would.
God, I wish Bertrand was here for this.
Yeah.
Oh, my dream has come true.
That's the first time you've ever said that.
You're right, and I don't think he heard it. Can we take a quick break, and I want to come back and ask you, the men of the show, a question.
Yeah, sure. All right, that's what's coming up. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Steve King, or Rich King, still retiring?
Yeah, he has not changed his mind. Rich King is retiring, Wendy.
Steve King retired?
Also retired. Yeah.
Okay.
All the Kings are retiring.
King family?
Retired. No more specials. They refused to do another holiday special.
Went to Dylan's Candy Bar, which, by the way, has a bar in it, which you didn't believe me.
At first, when they first opened Dylan's Candy Bar, it says Dylan's Candy Bar, and you said, I think they're going to put it on an alcohol bar. And I go, you can't do that in a kid's candy store. Wrong. They did.
And now that's why they have the candy posing pouch on prominent display right by the front of the store. There's a front register and a back register.
Where kids could see this and be traumatized by it.
And they have a candy bra for the girls.
That's fine.
And this is, I feel stupid, because they also have a candy G-string. So I was going to ask you, the men of the show,
yeah,
Steve Bertrand, you're included if you're listening, what the difference between a G-string and a posing pouch was.
Oh, that's the age-old question, isn't it?
I tuned posing? In for this one.
Posing pouch?
Yeah, and
well,
see,
a posing pouch, I believe, is for a man, and a G-string, I believe, is for a woman, I believe.
But men have G-strings, too.
No.
Do they?
Yes.
No, they do not. So.
Have you been to Marshall's or TJ Maxx and you look at the discount rack?
Do they call them? Maybe they're on a discount rack because men don't wear G-strings.
There always are a lot of the G-strings left. Men have G-strings.
They don't call them that,
don't
do they?
I don't think it's called that.
Well, I, you're right, evidently.
It's called something else.
Because when I saw the G-string, my question to you, the men of the show, was what's the difference between a G-string and a posing pouch? And it's not a joke.
Yeah.
But then I didn't look at the figure on the box. The candy bra is for a woman, and evidently the G-string is for a woman, too. So the posing pouch is just for you. Men wear G-strings.
But
It says that on my bumper sticker.
Real men wear G-strings.
Men play G-strings.
I think what you're getting is a difference of material, right? I think it would have to be different, wouldn't it?
You mean behind the curtain or
in front of and behind, isn't it? Wouldn't it be structured differently? I think.
Is your wizard behind the curtain, Steve?
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
It's not a man.
It's not a
and
man.
And those aren't pillows.
No.
All right, I will prove
to you. I think
you.
Structurally you're getting a different cut of fabric or candy in this case.
Yeah. Oh my God! Who
are you googling this right now?
I'm Google.
Yes, you are. Now go with your first answer. Whatever you're doing, play that up.
I am googling men's g-string, and there are
totally innocent.
You know they're going to take the internet away from us, don't you?
Men's g-strings. Bill is speechless.
You're showing me a picture that my eyes weren't ready to see.
Well, wouldn't it be like? Wouldn't it be b-string? Right. Boy, G for girl.
Is that what it means?
Keep explaining it, Kevin. Maybe we'll make it funny.
I thought this would be.
You shouldn't put, if the pictures you're showing me are accurate, you shouldn't put candy there.
Well, that's
what I'm
saying.
That's bad for business, is what that is.
And should Dylan's candy bar have the pouch, the posing, you got to say posing pouch.
Posing pouch.
Okay, I've never heard this. What is posing pouch?
I've never heard that
I've
either.
I've never heard of that.
Bodybuilders. You know how they pose? They wear the G-string kind of too.
Yeah.
you can't look away.
The picture you've shown me is of various men wearing these, and I know two of the guys in that picture.
It doesn't show their face.
No, it doesn't matter.
And when you say two of the guys.
Right. And one of them works here, Steve, and that's all I'm going to say right now.
Ben Cortez.
Now, I'm not saying names. I'm not mentioning names.
Oh, I am. All right. Well, I didn't know what the difference was, but evidently.
Do you have vinegar so I can wash my eyes out right now, by the way? I just need to wash my eyes out real quick.
Men wear G-strings. I just wanted to
I don't think a man's is called a G. I don't think it's called.
Is.
It is? Are
I
you sure?
Googled. Hang on.
I could Google three-headed radio host and something would come up.
No, a G-string.
I think that's just for women, I think. I'm pretty sure. You say no? You say
Why
a guy
is it called a G-string? And I don't mean this to be...
For gee whiz, what am I looking at?
I think it's Willikers, actually.
Gee Willikers.
Yeah. Well, I just don't think Dylan's Candy Bar should have it at
they
the front
shouldn't.
Register.
That seems a little much, doesn't it, for a store that knows kids are going to be coming in all day?
I know it's geared towards the adults, but the bar area is... off to the side and in the back.
Right.
So it's not like little kids aren't going to care about that.
I wouldn't think so. When I was a kid, and I don't know if this is still the case, but whatever, and they don't really have trick shops the way they used to. There used to be Ryan's Trick Shop and Riley's Trick Shop. There were trick shops all over where you could go and buy, you know, ice cubes that had a bug in it or some kind of fun
Whoopee
stuff.
Cushions.
A piece of gum that when you pull it, it cuts
your finger
off.
I love
stuff like that. All right. So, almost every one of those trick shops, or maybe every one of them, had quote unquote a back room that, you know, you had to be 18 years or older to go into.
The curtain?
And it had, yeah, there was always a
curtain. The red velvet curtain.
And kids just like me, would find something to look at that was near the curtain so that if somebody came in or out, you could just take a momentary peek inside. But I always thought, what crazy, weird stuff must go on in that back room? It always said, there was always a sign that said novelties. So I'd try to sell them on the fact that, number one, I was 18. I was like 11 trying to pretend I was 18. My wife and I were wondering if we could just take a quick look in that back room. Sure, of course. We
She's
need
looking
some novelties.
At G-strings currently. And
for men.
A secret.
Well, I apologize. I was going to ask the difference between a G-string and a posing pouch. But I did look up on the Straight Dope, what does the G and G-string stand for? Is it related to the G and G-men of the FBI?
I bet not.
Or
Although
should
I know
be...
one, I know one FBI head that probably might have worn one at one time.
Don't say head.
You know what I mean. President of the FBI.
The origin of the name isn't the local common knowledge I expected. Modern lexicography...
The best kind, by the way.
Believe it or not, is at a loss to account for the origin of the term G-string.
Really?
Which actually is often spelled G-E-E string.
Yeah.
One writer offers the thesis that a G-string resembles a capital G in shape. Clearly the work of a desperate mind.
Mm-mm. I don't think
that's
it. A
capital G in shape.
It doesn't, though.
Kevin?
I'm seeing a couple different things.
You're not on Wikipedia, I hope.
Oh, is that where you're at?
No, I don't trust
them.
Well,
I've seen it from a couple different sources, but one of them is telling me that it comes from the string that held together loincloths in Native Americans.
Native
and
American
I'm also
culture.
Seeing one that it could be standing for girdle string.
It doesn't hold anything in.
No, I don't
like
think so.
The girdle does.
This is what you're learning in the Bill and Wendy show.
But even if it came from a loincloth doesn't have a letter G.
Should be
G
an L
in it.
String.
An L string.
The loincloth brought to you by the letter G.
The earliest known reference to G string is in J.H. Beadle's Western Wilds in 1878. Around each boy's waist is the tight G string from which a simple strip of cloth runs between the limbs from the front to back. That was the loincloth.
Yeah.
But why did they call it a G string? The G-string originally referred only to the thong around the waist, which is precisely what a girdle was in its earliest form. Thus, G-string may be an abbreviation of girdle string, the only difficulty being that no such word has come to light.
Didn't you have an underwear store for a while called Sorry Thong Number? Didn't I shop at a store once that you owned called that?
I would have had a better pun.
What would your shop have been called?
I don't know.
You don't know? All right. I know I was in North Riverside Mall, and I thought I was in that store. I could be wrong.
I am completely drawing a blank.
That could have been the name of the store. For eunuchs. Underwear for eunuchs. Drawing a blank.
We're not talking about but never mind.
Yeah, let's go. Take a break,
Steve.
Come back
I love Steve because he realized mid-joke. I'm bailing.
I'm
suspending
himself.
My joke.
All of a sudden, I saw Kevin in my face.
All right, a quick break and then more show next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Yes, it is. Buddy Bill and Wendy here. We're your buddies. We're your radio buddies.
Sure.
And we are here to help. We are here to have fun. And we are here to learn things. And I have something that I need to discuss with a close personal friend of the show. Her name is Dr. Julie Morita. And Dr. Julie Morita is Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. Hello, Dr. Morita.
Hello, Wendy. How are you?
I'm very good, and I'm very puzzled. I hate to keep ripping on Jenny McCarthy, but there was a time that she did not allow her son to get vaccinated from certain things because she was under the impression that certain vaccinations caused autism. Since that came forward, the doctor who revealed the study has backtracked and said that wasn't really true. Jenny McCarthy is backtracking, saying that's not really true. But a large population of women decided not to get their kids vaccinated. And lo and behold, some diseases that were pretty much long gone, like mumps, for instance, came back. Is there any truth to that statement?
Yeah, so that's a great point. There were, in the early 1990s, there was some question about, a question raised in England in particular about an association between vaccines, measles vaccine in particular, and autism. But since that time, numerous studies have been done that have shown that there's no causal relationship with vaccines and with autism. But unfortunately, because of that concern or because that question was raised, many, many people decided not to get vaccinated. And so in countries where there hadn't been measles for many years, like in Europe or in the developed world, in England and Switzerland and Italy.
And at Disneyland or Disney World. Yeah. Remember the big outbreak there?
Sure, a year or so ago, sure.
Right. So in the U.S. even, we've had numerous cases imported into the United States, and then it's able to spread because there are some pockets of communities where people decided not to get vaccinated. So even though I think the tide has turned and people are now recognizing that the vaccines aren't associated with the vaccines, there still are some small pockets of communities where people choose not to get vaccinated.
And this is why I'd like you on today, because I have a terrible feeling that there's a new scare that has started via the internet. I've noticed a lot of my friends and acquaintances on Facebook are posting something about this HPV vaccination, which is it human papilloma? I don't even know how to say it. What's HPV?
Human papillomavirus.
I was close. And that is something that can ultimately cause cervical cancer in girls, correct?
This is correct. So human papillomavirus can cause cervical cancer in women. It can also cause anogenital cancers in men and women alike. And so it can cause numerous problems, health problems. And so as a result of that, the vaccine is out there and actually is quite effective and is very safe. And so I'm concerned if people are questioning the safety of this vaccine, because it's a life-saving vaccine that prevents cancer and can also prevent genital warts.
And I have two boys. It's sometimes people say it's more important for girls to get this vaccination, but that is not true, because as people grow up, a lot, unfortunately, people have unprotected sex. So boys and girls should be vaccinated.
Yes, definitely. Boys and girls are routinely recommended at the ages of 11 and 12 to get the vaccine. If they don't get it at 11 and 12, though, it's not too late, and they can get vaccinated when they're older. We just routinely want kids to get it early because they have really strong immune responses to the vaccine. And then we also get vaccinated before they become sexually active. We don't wait for kids to be exposed to mumps or to measles or a whooping cough before we vaccinate them. We vaccinate them before they get exposed to it. So we really want to get these kids vaccinated with the HPV vaccine at 11 to 12 years of age.
And I have two boys. One has already gone through the three-shot treatment. The other one is getting his physical at the end of the month. And I asked my pediatrician, and that's what you should do. Have a good relationship with your pediatrician. And when I said, is this a good thing? And she said, well, I did it with my kids. Mm-hmm. And then I know I can trust her. Now, what I have seen on Facebook, and like I said, a lot of my friends, I have some that are very into natural foods and natural remedies. And this is actually from a website called thehealthyhomeeconomist.com. And I want to talk about this with you, because people are buying into this. And I got to be honest with you, with my son's appointment at the end of the month, I'm thinking, oh my God, this has changed. This says the American College of Pediatricians has taken the extreme and possibly unprecedented step of releasing a disturbing statement outlining its legitimate concerns about the safety of the HPV vaccines Gardasil and Cervarix. The purpose of the statement is so that, quote, individuals considering the use of human papillomavirus, I can't say it.
You said it right, virus.
HPV.
HPV vaccines could be made aware of these concerns pending further action by the regulatory agencies and manufacturers. The concern is the connection between HPV vaccines, Gardasil and Cervarix, and premature ovarian failure in adolescent girls within weeks to several years of receiving these shots. Have you heard anything? And who is the American College of Pediatricians?
So, the American College of Pediatricians is not the national professional organization for all pediatricians. The American Academy of Pediatrics is the national organization for all pediatricians, and that's a very well-respected professional organization that works very closely with the CDC and other professional organizations and adheres to the national recommendations for vaccination. And those recommendations are based on science. And so the American College of Pediatricians is a smaller subset of pediatricians who are aligning themselves together based on other principles than the total American Academy of Pediatrics.
Premature ovarian failure in adolescent girls within weeks to several years of receiving these shots, which is a combination of three of the shots. Is there any news on this connection?
So before the vaccines are licensed and recommended for people, these vaccines are studied rigorously and over many years, and this vaccine was found to be safe and effective. In addition to that, once the vaccine has been licensed and recommended and been used, we continue to monitor these vaccines for side effects or for complications or things that were really uncommon, but because we're now vaccinating millions of people, we might detect. And in the past, there have been some bad things that have been identified with vaccines causing some side effects. But with the HPV vaccine, that is not the case, both in the pre-licensure or pre-recommendation studies and also in the studies that have been done since then. There's no causal association found between that vaccine and ovarian cancers. So I'm not sure what this body is recommending or what they're basing this this warning on. I quickly looked up their website just now to see what they're recommending. They in January they made this recommendation to be aware, to be notified about it. But then quickly in February 1st, they put a clarification out there saying that their caution or advising people to be aware of this was not a did not mean, they didn't mean to have people not get vaccinated. They
just, well, that's contradicting what they've said, isn't it?
So I guess what my point is, the well-recognized, scientifically-based, data-oriented organizations like the CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Family Physicians Organizations, American College of Physicians, who are internal medicine physicians, all feel strongly that this is a very safe and effective vaccine. And it's routinely recommended at 11, 12 years of age. So even if there are subgroups of individuals or healthcare providers who are questioning the safety of the vaccine, these nationally recognized science-oriented organizations are recommending this use. And we are following those recommendations here in the city of Chicago because we recognize that these are based on science and based on data.
Someone has just texted, God, I can't speak. No, this vaccination scares me. It's too new, has too many side effects. It should not be given. I do all vaccines, but will not do this one. No HPV, just be safe. But you're not being safe.
Yeah, you're not being safe. And this is, again, a cancer-causing vaccine, or cancer-causing disease. The vaccine prevents cancer. My husband is an internal medicine physician at the county hospital here in Chicago. And when he's on service or on taking care of patients, he doesn't infrequently tell me about a young woman who is diagnosed with cervical cancer and who is dying. And we now have a tool to prevent these young women from dying from cancer. And we can also prevent other forms of cancer in men. And I think we would be missing an incredible opportunity to prevent these serious diseases in our young people if we don't vaccinate, because there are these misconceptions out there about the safety of this vaccine. This is a life-saving, cancer-preventing vaccine.
Dr. Morita, you talked about the testing period that goes into any of these vaccines. Let's say today somebody came up with some vaccine that took care of, say, something like the Zika virus or something like that. How long of a period would it be through testing before that could be available to the general public?
It takes years. I mean, I think in order for a vaccine to be licensed, they do these tests and trials, not even in animals. They just test to look and see, is it possible the vaccine could work? And then they move on to animals, and then they move on to humans, small numbers of humans. And then they move up into larger numbers of humans before they actually license or recommend a vaccine. And even though HPV vaccine may seem like it's a new vaccine, it's actually been licensed since 2006, so we're going on 10 years now.
Not so new.
That's not so new, and we have millions and millions of people who have been vaccinated against this serious disease, and we are not seeing adverse events. I mean, people have soreness in their arms. They have pain or redness at the site, but that's not enough to not vaccinate. That's when we're talking about preventing cancer and saving lives.
And I have heard and read that some people have fainted afterwards, and it's kind of something that I think could be suggested to a kid, because when my older son got it, I said, now you might feel dizzy or something afterwards. I have heard reports, and sure enough, when he got the shot, he's like, I feel kind of lightheaded. So they just had him lay down for a little while,
right,
and like 5 minutes. He never fainted. He was fine. I mean, you know, some people react differently to vaccinations or shots in general.
So in general, teenagers have a tendency to faint when they get vaccinated. It may be because they don't eat regularly or because they're tired, because they're not sleeping regularly. But in any case, we do know that it's not just with this vaccine, but all vaccines that are given to teenagers, that they have an increased likelihood of fainting. And so as a result, when teenagers are routinely vaccinated, we recommend that all adolescents who get vaccinated in any form, that they sit for 20 minutes after getting vaccinated so they don't pass out and they don't faint on the street or while walking around or while trying to leave the clinic. And so that is a risk, but it's not unique to this vaccine. It's all vaccines that are given to teenagers.
Some people faint when they get vaccinations. Bill Left punches people when
yes,
he gets shots. He's very afraid
stay away
of
from
needles.
Me. Stay away from me.
Dr. Julie Morita is the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. I really trust your opinion, and I wanted to get you on the air to dispel some of these rumors that are happening all over Facebook. In your honest opinion, have your kids had the HPV vaccinations?
Yeah, so I have a 13-year-old son and an 18-year-old daughter. And my 13-year-old son, when he was 11, the day after his birthday, I took him to get his first dose of the vaccine, and he completed his series that year. So definitely, my children have gotten this vaccine. They've had no adverse problems with it. I would not miss this opportunity to keep them protected and safe from cancer.
And never too late, even if you have a 16-year-old son. Get
Absolutely.
It done.
That's right.
Or yeah. daughter. I'm sorry. It's not just
their daughters. If they didn't get it when they were 11 or 12, you want to get it in now because you want to protect them from cancer and from other serious diseases.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate this information.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Marita. All right. A quick break. A lot more show coming your way. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Really like to help people and dispute untruths, and I have to tell you the truth. We got a text here that we're trying to get the answer to because it's really bothering me here. It's a great question that came after we hung up with Dr. Julie Marita. Is the HPV vaccine only for sexually active girls? My daughter's severely disabled and will never have sex, which is a great question. So we're trying to get in touch with Dr. Marita to find out the answer to that. Yeah. It is a sexually, HPV is a sexually transmitted disease.
Apparently it is. So you, I don't know if this, because she's not a part of that equation, if this would affect her or not. I don't know. I would only be guessing. So I don't know. So Kevin's doing his best to find out from Dr. Marita what the situation is there. We don't know.
All right. Well, we try to do some good and we try to act like idiots. It's you never know what you're going to get when you tune into this show. Right. It's a potpourri or potpourri, as some people say. A plethora.
I want to, when we come back, Steve's going to give you the news, and then I will warn you right now, there's something that is about to take place in Chicago that is as disturbing as anything I've ever heard in my life. And I found out about it yesterday, and I said to myself, this is impossible. This can't happen in the year 2016. We've all advanced far beyond something like this. And the more research I've done about it, the more it turns out it is a real thing.
You told me about it. I'm speechless.
It doesn't make sense that something this heinous could ever exist. And yet, as of this upcoming Saturday, it will exist. It will exist here in Chicago and in other cities. And I'll tell you what it is after Steve's news. But I'm not kidding when I tell you, you're going to be outraged when you hear about it. I was, you were. It's nothing short of outrageous, and we'll explain more right after the news, I promise you. So we'll take a quick break, we'll get to the news, and then I'll tell you about this very, very disturbing event that's going to take place on Saturday. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thank you. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to join in, 312-981-7200. I'm going to warn you, my guess is you will be outraged by what we're about to tell you. I was, and Wendy, I explained this to you earlier, and you were. And I don't know how you can hear about this and not be outraged. I'll explain.
Although when you teased about a rally coming up, there were a bunch of texters that know what this is already. So word has gotten out.
Word has gotten out. And
this
is
sickening.
I'll explain how I'm aware of this. Last night, my daughter Kylie said to me, I'm getting a lot of texts from friends of mine that go to school in Wisconsin at the University of Wisconsin, and they're having a rally either on campus or off campus. They were trying to figure out where exactly to have this rally for a pro-rape group, a group that is in favor of rape.
And I thought I misheard you. Pro-rate?
Pro-rape. Pro-rape. So I said to her at the time, this is last night, Kylie, trust me when I tell you this, that's impossible. There is no group that would consider themselves pro-rape. That is out of the realm of possibility. I said, and if this was near a college like University of Wisconsin, they would do everything in their power to stop this. That's impossible. That can't happen. She said, no, I'm getting texts. And she showed me a couple of the texts from friends of hers that don't know what to do about this. They've been warned there at the University of Wisconsin to stay as far away, once they establish where this rally will take place, to stay away from it. So I went to my computer. I got a computer in my house. I went to my computer in my house. And I typed this in because I wanted to know if this could even be remotely true, because I can't believe that they would have something like this. Not only is it true, but it's also happening here in Chicago on Saturday, where they're trying to put a group together, a rally together in Rogers Park for this same exact group, a pro-rape group.
How does this happen?
I'll read you the story. This is out of DNA Info, our own DNA Info. Listen to this. A group of men's rights activists are planning to meet on the far north side on Saturday night as a way to come out proudly about the difficulties they face as men who both despise women, yet work tirelessly to get dates with them. And Chicago feminists will be there to welcome them. It's part of an international tribal meetup day in which followers of the Return of the Kings blog are supposed to heed to the call of their leader, a blogger named Roosh Validas. He's 36 years old. He's been a staunch proponent of what he calls legal rape. I propose that we make the violent taking of a woman not punishable by law when done off of public grounds, he wrote in a blog dated February of 2015. Aside from his pro-rape stance, which is really all I need to judge a person.
Yeah. Good point.
What can you, what else can you tell me about him that go, ah, well, all right.
Not such a bad guy.
All right. Roosh also is looked upon by his followers as a pickup artist who claims to have an expertise in women that can help his fans get dates. The meetup is a solution to what Roosh said is a problem among his followers, building meaningful relationships. Obviously, that's what he cares about, obviously.
He's the king.
He is the king. Though he said his fans have quote-unquote normal friendships, he believes his followers may struggle to have real-life dependable relationships. By meeting in person, the men can be more strongly, can more strongly connect and bond, as well as reaffirm their beliefs about what they call the enemy, more specifically the women that they are trying to pick up. That's the healthiest way to look at any relationship, really, is to look at who you're involved with as the enemy. I think you can't go wrong once you establish that.
Keep your friends near.
Your enemy's closer. Up to now, the enemy has been able to exert their power by isolating us and attacking with shrieking mobs, but we'll be able to neutralize that tactic by amassing in high numbers come February the 6th, Roosh wrote. I will exact furious retribution upon anyone who challenges you in public on that date. Despite meeting in public places with a goal of proudly declaring their feelings, the men's group said it still wants privacy and gets concerned about being doxxed, D-O-X-X-E-D. It means it would prefer counter-protesters not record and identify members nor publish the pictures or videos of them online, which could interfere with their employment or private life. You could see where something like that would be an issue. If you're a member of a group like this, somebody's got a cell phone, a camera, they're going to take your pictures. So their concern, not so much the anti-rape stance or the pro-rape stance that they're taking, their concern is that they could possibly lose a job over being a member of this group.
Well, they should.
How does the, I mean, all right, there's a couple of different questions that arise. Number one, what's wrong with you guys? Seriously, what's wrong with you? I guess the more broad question is this. Do you allow something like this to happen if you're a university like the University of Wisconsin, if you're the police who are in Rogers Park and you know something like this is coming? I know it falls under freedom of speech, but boy, is this offensive.
And the First Amendment also gives us the right to assembly. And you can, assemble wherever you want. It is a free country. But shouldn't there be rules governing that?
You know,
if it's going to hurt or offend, well, I guess, see, it's a weird situation.
Two things come to mind immediately. Number one, the groups, the pro-Nazi groups that assembled in Skokie years ago, they knew that Skokie was a predominantly Jewish community, and they thought to themselves, where better can we make our message heard than by having marches on Skokie? And if you remember, they were allowed to do just that. Number two, the other thing that comes to mind immediately is the Westboro Church that goes out of their way to protest anytime there's a funeral anywhere, and they're also protected. You know, they also have the right to assemble. And
that seems odd, Bill, because that is almost attacking one single participant.
Sure.
When they show up at these funerals. So in a way, that's different than just having a rally for anyone to attend and to show your support for something.
Right.
The Westboro Baptist Church really singles out an individual family.
Right.
And there should be some like addendum to the right to assembly from the First Amendment to end it for that particular reason.
There is, in the way that they set up a perimeter. Like they say, you can assemble X amount of feet or yards away from whatever the situation is. Like in this case, it's a funeral or a burial. So you're allowed to have this, but it has to be a certain distance away. But something like this, and I also want to say this is a little bit inside, but I'll say it anyway. When I found out the story last night, obviously, and then brought it in, and I told you and Kevin about it today. And I said to Kevin, I feel bad about this, but get this guy who wants to organize this, this guy Roosh Validas. I don't know how you say his last name.
Idiot.
See if
I think that's how it's pronounced.
That's how it's pronounced. See if we can get him on to argue his point. Good luck to him in arguing his point that a pro-rape group is a good idea. But just to be fair, try to see if he wants on to talk about it. He's not returned any of the emails that we've sent his way. And I have to be honest, in all the time that we've been doing the show, I've never been happier that a guest has not want to come on. Usually we invite a guest on to come on, and that's the way it plays. But I kind of didn't want him to come on, but I thought just out of fairness,
I would like to have him
let's
on.
Get this guy a chance to try his best.
I just want to ask him, I mean, I'm not, how could he even explain himself in a logical way? You have got to see all these texts. Somebody says, oh my God, I want to vomit. Somebody says, I'm thinking of starting a pro-rapist homicide rally. I'm pro-rape of the gentleman in jail after they are arrested for rape. Come on, this is a bad joke, right?
No, it's not.
WTF, picking up a woman is not the same as raping her. How about a pro-castration march?
It's not a bad idea.
Somebody says this is a hoax.
No, it's not a hoax.
Rape is a crime. How can they be allowed to assemble? All these questions are pretty great here, and that's why I would like this guy on to answer it.
He chose not to appear on the show today.
He really said no?
Well, he didn't return. Kevin sent him a couple of texts or emails, and he didn't respond to any of them. You can find him online. I mean, he's not bashful about the fact that this is his group. He's kind of proud of the fact
165 meetings in 43 countries.
Yeah, how about that? He's from England originally, I believe.
Hello. Can I tell you, as of 46 minutes ago, there has been some news released, a restaurant in Homewood, Flossmoor. Homewood restaurant selected as a location for this blogger's pro-rape rally isn't about to let that go down on its property. We're going to take a break. We're trying to locate this restaurant, and we're Dariush Valizda.
It's spelled V-A-L-I-Z-A-D-E-H. Roosh is the easy part to
Dariush. Dariush. Dariush Valizda.
Yeah, I think that's probably the closest.
He plans to host the gathering in the restaurant's parking lot. So this is in Homewood.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get in touch of the Bellagio restaurant, 17501 Dixie Highway, because they alerted the police. They said,
they should have.
This is our restaurant.
Right.
And we'll find out a little bit more, but this event is expected to take place worldwide on Saturday with 165 meetings in 43 countries. It is not a hoax. And yes, it's 2016 and we live in America.
Amazing. Isn't it? It's like I said, it couldn't be more disturbing. 312-981-7200 if you want to call in or text in. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Get the stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. All right, so there's a story that is too disturbing to believe except for the part that it's true. A big event is scheduled to take place, actually not just here in Chicago and not just in Wisconsin, but internationally. It's being called International Tribal Meetup Day.
165 meetings in 43 countries.
That's how serious this is. There's a blogger named Roosh Valizda. He's 36 years old. He's got a group called Return of the Kings. They are a pro-rape men's rights group. They believe that legal rape should become a reality. It is incredibly disturbing. We found out, Wendy, you just read on the internet a very short time ago that there's a restaurant in Homewood, Bellagio Ristorante.
Yeah, I saw this. This news broke 45 minutes ago. Bellagio Ristorante, 17501 Dixie Highway in Homewood. This particular restaurant was selected as a location for this blogger's pro-rape rally, and we have on the line with us Mike Galdario, Sr. Mike.
Yes.
Mike, you are the owner of this Bellagio Ristorante?
I am.
What is going on? How did you get wind of this pro-rape rally that was supposed to happen in your parking lot on Saturday?
I got a call Monday. We're closed. We were doing some repair work, and a young lady calls me from Champaign, asked if I'd seen this blog. I said, I didn't know what she was talking about.
Because so who would believe it if somebody says something? Oh, yeah, this, have you heard about this blog? Who would believe this?
Well, she said, her opening line was, I know you're not going to believe this, but I need to tell you something. So she continued to tell me the story, and then she sent me the blog, and we're all shocked as everybody else is. This is so ridiculous that, I mean, who would want to be a part of this? This is crazy.
And
why would they name us, out of the state of Illinois, they named two places, and it's It's one of ours.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
So they were supposed to assemble in your parking lot. So what did you do? You called the police, didn't you?
Call the police, talk to the detectives, you know, talk to my legal attorney and see what we can do about this, because we've had over 300 phone calls in the last 2 days and emails. You know, people think like, are you part of this? Are you, you know, why would we come to your restaurant? So we're trying to explain to them, trust me, this is not us.
So, but you then wonder, what's the best plan of action? Like, I would think if their fear, we just read a story, Mike, about the group, and that their fear is that people will take pictures or videos of them, and that could hurt them with their jobs. But then I also think it might benefit us, society, the rest of us, to have pictures and videos of these guys to distribute. That might be a good deterrent from anybody wanting to join a group like this. You know what I mean?
Well, what they're saying is that they're supposed to meet at 8 o'clock and 8:20, be gone. And they're supposed to ask if they know where the local pet shop is. And if you direct them to a real pet shop, you're not part of their block. So I don't know. I don't know what the answers are. And I know there's women that, you know, they want to come here and protest. So it's
and you don't need that aggravation. You're not a part of this.
Well, I'm a businessman. We have parties going on. There's cancer supports. Has a big Texas hold them every year. Support the cancer victims. You know, we're busy. We got homecoming for the kids Saturday.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, we definitely want this kind of aggravation, and I definitely don't want this kind of press.
How does a guy, Mike Galderio Sr., the owner of the Bellagio Ristorante, 17501 Dixie Highway, we're glad we were able to communicate with you, because if you see this, you are going to go, oh, my God, this guy supports it. This restaurant supports it. How can they just pick a random place like this? And what are your, you probably can't discuss this, but do you have any legal repercussions that you can take against this guy?
That's what we're trying to find out, because he does mention our name and our address. And I understand the state of Illinois is so big, and he picks two places in the state of Illinois, and one is here. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense.
You're right. I almost want them to be here, so we take pictures and
yeah,
follow them to where this meeting's at and see what the hell's wrong with you.
And if you go to the Facebook page for the Bellagio Ristorante, it basically says, thanks for all that reached out for letting us know about this rally. We gave the info over to Homewood Police, and they're handling it. We in no way condone or gave permission to this group and are doing everything in our power to put an end to it. How can you not put an end to it? This is your own private property, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny, because people are even calling saying, how could you be part of this? So it's so viral out there. People just don't realize how bad it is.
Well, Mike, that's what we wanted to do, was establish the fact that you are not a part of it. Just the opposite. The last thing you want is something like this to take place on your property. So we're sorry you're
Listen
going
to
through
the,
this.
Your phone has rung like three times, four times since we've talked to you. I am so sorry you're going through this.
I know. They're not asking about the specials. I feel kind of bad about it.
What are the specials? We'll ask.
We got a great veal chop going on.
Oh, that sounds all right. Well, Mike, we are, as we both mentioned, it's terrible that you're going through this. We know that you want no part of this. So we hope that people realize this, that the restaurant there in Homewood, Bill Ristorante, has nothing to do with this whatsoever.
I appreciate the phone call and hope you guys can help us spread the news that, hey, you know, We're good Americans. We're
absolutely.
Like, when is this supposed to happen? Because we should
Saturday.
Tell. All right. So Saturday at what time?
Because 8 o'clock.
At 8 p.m.
Yes.
I know you're booked for a special event, but boy, I wish we could just tell our listeners to go to Bellagio Ristorante, 17501 Dixie Highway in Homewood, and be there to support you and get that veal chop and show people they will not stand for this.
Well, I wish if there's some way WGN can come out here, you're more than welcome.
Well, thank you.
Have you.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, good luck to you. And you know what? We might want to talk to you on Monday and see what transpired with this. Can you hang on a second and Kevin will get your info?
Sure. Thank you so much.
Good luck to you. How can this be? It's a private establishment.
I don't know how any part of this could be. Just the fact that this group exists, that in and of itself is so disturbing. But then every offshoot of it just gets crazier and crazier. A men's rights pro-rape group should not exist. Really, it just shouldn't.
I want to know if you have any of his books. Who's this? What's this guy's name again?
The guy who's behind it, his name's Roosh Valizada. Like I said, originally from somewhere in the UK, but now because of his blog is getting response all over the world, really, and is putting these rallies together, these meetings together in cities all over the globe.
Have you read his book, Bang, A textbook for picking up girls and getting laid?
No, I forgot to read that. I must have forgot somehow.
There has to be some legal ramification of assembling on private property.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It's different if you pick a house, a house, that's
right.
Private, too.
You would think get one of the proud members of this group to host it in their house.
No one wants to admit they're a member.
I guess not. All right, I told you it would be disturbing. A quick break, some news, more show coming your way. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, WGN. Can we take a quick time out on the show to wish somebody a very special greeting? Is that possible? Little Stevie Bertrand comes in every day, and all he wants to do is entertain people. That's all. That's his dream every single day, Wendy, is to entertain and enlighten. And he doesn't do it very often, but when he does it, boy, he nails it. Today is Little Stevie Bertrand's birthday.
Little Stevie B. Hey,
thank you very much.
Hey, Bert.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
What did he say that people called him as a nickname?
King.
No, that wasn't it.
Great one.
No. Bert.
What did you tell us your nickname was? Was it Bert's or something?
First of all, I don't know why I made that mistake in the first place. I would never repeat it now.
All right.
So what was it, Bert?
Yeah.
It was, wasn't it?
Can I tell you, he told us that off the air. He goes, oh, yeah, people used to call me, is it Bert singular?
Yeah, it was just, my teachers, my family.
He goes, everybody growing up in Manteno, everybody called me Bert. Why did I just say that?
Yeah, you realized it was a mistake. But your own family, who have the same name as you, Bertrand, they called you Bert.
Yeah, it's just how I was known.
Your mom and dad called you Bert.
Until I went to college, pretty much.
And then they called you...
Professor?
Professor.
Yeah, it's weird.
Professor Bert.
Yeah, Professor Bert.
I love this song, and I couldn't think of who did it, and it just came to me all of a sudden.
Okay, back to me. It's my birthday.
Back to Steve now, already in progress.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Altered Images sings happy birthday to you. I was going to sing like Marilyn Monroe, and then I thought, he really won't want to hear that.
Oh, I think he does want to hear that. You want to do the Marilyn Monroe?
I didn't want to hear it.
You
please.
Should do it, Wendy.
No.
That's all he wants. It's all Steve wants.
Surprised up here. You missed a little party. We had a surprise party up here.
Up in the newsroom?
It was a surprise
to
us.
Newsroom. No, not in the newsroom. Oh. In programming?
Oh.
Yeah, it's very fun.
Why don't they? We were up there, too.
Yeah, I didn't see
any. We're the outcasts.
Yes, you are.
We're the... I was going to say redheaded stepchildren, but Jimmy DeCastro is redheaded, and so is my son.
Oh, yeah.
So is Kevin's brother.
Anyway, you're going to sing like Marilyn Monroe.
No, Bill was going
That's
to.
That's all Steve wants is to hear you sing like Marilyn
then
Monroe.
Do it.
I can't please, do please. It. I can't do it justice.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh. Bill, that is very good.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
He worked really hard.
That's very nice.
Could you do the rest of it?
No, that's
happy
all I got.
Happy birthday. Oh, darn it. You were talking while singing.
So I'm guessing there will be a big party at Chuck E. Cheese's later?
No.
Dave and Buster's.
Dave and Buster's?
No.
Also
we,
fun?
We went out for dinner last night, and tonight I'll just go home and, you know, do what I usually do, go to sleep at 6 o'clock.
You really go to sleep at 6 o'clock?
No, I'm up much later than that.
8?
10-ish.
Oh, you stay up till 10.
Yeah.
Huh.
How about that?
He gets up very early.
Yes, he does.
Crack of dawn.
Yes, he does.
Probably get up before dawn.
I thought your wife's name was...
All right.
Hey.
All right. You're ruining Steve's birthday celebration.
Such a nice 2.5 minutes.
There. Everything about Steve's birthday celebration has been ruined now.
Well,
hope you're happy.
Can I just tell you, I'm the one girl involved with this boy group here.
Yeah.
And girls are typically the ones who keep track of birthdays and are more organized.
Usually.
You guys got robbed. I am the worst of all of you.
Yeah, why is that? Why don't you spend more time recognizing us on our special day?
Up?
I think I can speak for all three of us when we say we are a lot more girl than you in many ways.
Yep.
Won't argue with that?
No.
We're more sensitive, both emotionally and to the touch.
And that's a toucher or touchy.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
You do have soft hands. You don't do any work.
I have the softest hands.
You don't wash dishes because you guys don't cook, so I
right.
guess you don't
we
have dishes.
Right, we go out
dishes.
To eat, so it'd be weird to just go in the kitchen and wash the dishes when I'm done. Hey, would you guys mind taking $4 off the tab if I just wash the dishes? We eat out more times than not, so yeah, I don't really wash dishes. And we have a dishwasher, so.
What's his name?
Kirk.
Captain Kirk?
That's what he wants, but I'm not playing that game. I'm smarter than that.
You
thank
can't
you.
Give him everything.
No.
Well, happy birthday, Steve.
Thank
what,
you very
what
much.
What is today's date?
February 3rd.
You look great.
You don't know how old I am.
I
do
know
how old you are.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to say or would you prefer not to say?
53.
I will be that next Friday.
Yeah.
Really? Your birthday? So that's what this is about, really.
So. Yeah, so it all comes back to me. No, because I'm actually not going to be here on my birthday.
Taking your birthday off?
Just a half a day. I have things I got to do. I have a special mission on my birthday.
Do you?
Yes. But 53 is a fun year, I hear.
What happens?
You know what? It's been great so far, Wendy.
Steve, what happens when you think about your mom and dad at 53? Don't you feel, and this is not a shot on your mom and dad because I'm sure they're they're the finest people on the planet.
Right.
But don't you say, I'm different at 53 than my dad.
I'm way cooler.
Yeah,
that's
I guess.
What you're saying.
I guess. Do you do that ever?
A little
bit. They seem older.
My parents are very active in driving around all the place.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, but I mean, when we were younger, to look at someone who was 50 or 53,
they looked ancient.
Like my grandparents.
Yes.
Generation.
Right.
It would be in the house dress, not leaving, you know, all day and wearing the apron.
Yep.
I mean, I've got an apron on right now, but it's a bad example.
Well, you've got cookies going in the newsroom, so it makes sense.
I've got some cookies going, baby.
Right.
Oh, right. Boy.
But you know what I mean? Like, I was saying to Terry a couple of months ago, I said, you and I are older than our parents were. Like, when I first met her parents or she met my parents, we're older than they were, but it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think it goes both ways. Like you are probably living younger, but as you get older, you look a lot younger to yourself. I'm sure they didn't look as old to themselves as
probably
they look to you.
Yeah, but our kids don't think in my house, I have pictures as you walk in the entryway. They're black and white pictures of my wedding. My mom and dad, Jim's mom and dad, my grandparents, Jim's grandparents. So you see all the wedding pictures of all our generations.
Right.
And it's funny because the kids look at that and they're like, God, how old was your mom when she got married? Like 60?
Yeah,
I said, no, she was 30 or younger. It's like, how old were you? I said, I was 34. It's like, God, you look way younger than
you just
grandmother
benefited
did.
From the fact that cat glasses weren't in style when you got married.
You know what? She is wearing cat glasses.
Yeah, sure.
But that's what I mean. Like, even sometimes, like, you've been married a long time. How many years?
24, almost 25 years.
So you look back at your wedding picture. Does it look dated?
No, it looks kind of modern.
Ours,
it really does.
I had my hair done in an updo, but I tried to be pretty close to traditional on my wedding day. No shaved head, no crazy makeup or anything. And so when I look at it now, it doesn't look that dated, but it's funny. You're on Facebook and you see people that got married in the 80s.
And it looks like
it looks like the big hair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It looks so unbelievably out of character.
Right.
For the time we're in.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So here's what the lesson is to everyone. Go traditional on your wedding day because then it's not going to look outdated.
What?
What do you mean?
Nothing at all.
I'm taking back all the birthday greetings I've
given
you.
Oh, come on. You were so kind to Steve on his special day. Steve, happy birthday.
Thanks to both of you.
We're very proud of you.
You and Kevin, the two of you, made my birthday
happy. Oh, that was nice.
It would have been nice if you'd been up the party, but...
No one told us.
You were on the air.
They did this while we were on?
Yeah, they waited.
Mm-hmm. What kind of cake?
It was a very nice chocolate cake with creamy icing and
nice.
Had my name on it.
Very nice.
Which, you know, goes to
Bert?
Say something.
No, hey Bert.
Steve.
All right, let's take a quick break. We've got a little bit more for you before Ro and Anna come in.
Not so much.
Not that much
I'm pretty
more.
Spent.
A little bit more, and then that's how it plays out. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill left. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Steve Bertrand's birthday.
So he left. He's gone.
Left early.
Bye. I wanted to explain to him that if he dropped his chocolate cake on the floor,
mm-hmm.
his birthday cake,
mm-hmm.
5-second rule is actually true. He could have eaten it.
All right. I know that there has now been a study. The good people who made science have made a study.
Well, a NASA engineer actually proved it to be true. But can I tell you, you read news on a different day and it'll say red wine prevents heart attacks.
Sure.
And the next day it'll be white wine prevents heart attacks.
Right.
So I don't think we ever find out the truth.
A quick explanation for those of you unfamiliar with the 5-second rule. I think everyone on the planet is aware of it, is according to everyone everywhere, if you drop something on the floor and you pick it up, you can still eat it within 5 seconds. But if you wait 5 seconds or more before eating it, then germs will magically jump onto that food. Because germs always do that. They go 1, 1,000, 2, 1,000, 3, 1,000, 4, 1,000, and on 5, they jump onto your food.
See, that's what's ridiculous.
Right, because that's impossible, because germs don't count.
No. No one taught them.
No.
All right. According to Discovery Science Channel's The Quick and the Curious show, we should be on that.
I'm surprised they haven't called.
The five-second rule is a real thing when the item and the surface it falls onto are dry. And that's what I said. If you have a piece of pizza and it falls on your kitchen floor,
right,
and it falls right side up,
yeah,
and you've just washed your floor, I'm sorry, I'm
going to eat
it.
You would still eat it? You would?
If it falls upside down, no.
Then you would not eat it.
No, because then the wetness of the cheese...
And the grease.
Would, you know, then it's on the floor.
Yeah.
If it fell on a carpet, I wouldn't eat it regardless because there might be fibers on it.
Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean...
I still would not eat it. I can't imagine eating it. I've done it with a milk dud.
That's self-contained. It's got a, you know, the chocolate coating.
Yeah. I guess with something like that, I would. I don't know why. I don't know why in my head it's okay if it's a milk dud or a raisinette and it drops. It's like, oh, all right. But if it was something more substantial.
Well, it depends what it is. If it's something ooey and gooey.
Yeah.
It would be.
That just
I mean,
makes the flavor more.
No, I would not. Again, if a piece of pizza fell on the floor, like a little corner piece.
You would still eat it off the floor.
Yeah, because that's kind of a dried out piece. The corners, you know, when you get it cut in the grid, the Chicago grid.
Yeah.
If a corner piece falls, yeah, I might pick it up. I might just give it to the dog.
Does it have to do with volume? For instance, let's say you just opened a fresh pizza and there's 24 pieces in front of you and you drop one. Then would you throw it away going, I got 23 other pieces, but if it was your last piece, would
yes.
you go, oh, that's my last
that
piece.
That is exactly
it. It plays into it a little bit?
That is exactly it. And for the most part, it's got to be a self-encapsulated thing like a milk dud or a malted milk ball.
Right.
Because you could just blow it off. You know,
yeah.
No fuzz on it anymore. Well, as an experiment, NASA engineer Mike Meacham offered up cookies to strangers in a park. He then dropped the sweet treats onto the ground. Only one man ate the gift to
What's
the annoyance of the woman
guy?
He was with.
That guy sees a cookie fall on the ground in a park and just goes, yeah, I'll still take it. Doesn't that seem a little excessive?
Well, a guy comes up. First of all, it's a stranger. Although what?
A stranger with a free
would
cookie.
Would you like a cookie?
Sure. Sure.
I wouldn't take it regardless of him dropping it or not.
Yeah, it seems suspect.
Bacteria jumps onto food as soon as it hits the ground, but the problem only begins when either the food or the surface is wet. The show's narrator said he'll be all right, even though he ate the cookie off the ground, because although small amounts of bacteria do hop onto food as soon as it hits the ground, the problems only really begin when the food and the surfaces are wet. Moist foods left longer than 30 seconds collect 10 times the bacteria than those snapped up after only 3 seconds. E. coli, salmonella, and listeria love wet environments.
Mm-hmm.
When they're booking their spring break vacations, I'd like a wet environment.
That's the number one priority.
They absorb water for the nutrients they need to grow and multiply. It's safer to spill food on carpets or rugs because their tufts have less surface area to transmit
I'm
germs.
I'm not buying that at all.
I'm not either. Plus, you get the fiber.
Right. And plus, like, all right. People have been walking on that surface all day, carpet or regular floor, and you don't know where their shoes have been or their feet have been.
I don't know where your mouth has been.
I don't know where your mouth has been. I want a complete printout of everywhere everybody's mouth has been before I eat anything.
The type of surface onto which the food is dropped also accounts for how safe it is to eat again. It's better to spill food onto carpets and rugs rather than linoleum because their tufts have less surface area to transmit the germs. But I wouldn't...
No.
I'd rather... If I dropped a self-encapsulated malted milk ball on
right.
my kitchen floor linoleum,
yes,
I'd pick it up and eat it.
You still would.
If it was on the carpet, I probably
would. Then you would not.
Really?
Kevin?
I'd do both.
Kevin only eats off the floor. Have you seen him in the office? He pours his food on the floor and he eats it off the floor.
I saw him nibbling on your ankle one day.
What there was a day we had to have a talk. But how about people who go, you know, her floors are so clean you could eat off of them. I always think, when would that be an option? When would you go to somebody's house and go, hey, you know what? Let's forego the table. This floor looks fantastic. Let's just eat off the floor.
You are so literal.
I guess I am.
You really are. And here's the good news. If you drop that cookie on dry ground,
mm-hmm.
you should have plenty of time to pick it up and eat it. The 5 second rule is really the 30 second moisture and surface rule. So if it's dry item on a dry surface,
yeah, you get 30 seconds
leeway.
You get 30
seconds.
I've seen people count, like they'll drop food and they'll go 1, 2, 3 and they'll like in their heads, they're like, oh, I got it in 4 seconds. I'm safe. I can eat it. No germs. That's
not
right.
How about when you drop something, you pick it up right away? Why do you...
1, 1,000, 2, 1,000
Just pick it up after one.
I guess. Well, maybe it dropped and rolled a little bit.
Don't you stop, drop, and roll?
You're supposed to stop, drop, and roll. You're supposed to, but, you know, everything happens so
fast.
It's
especially tasty when it rolls under, like, a dresser that you haven't moved in a couple of years.
Right.
Mm. You know how many malted milk balls are under my refrigerator right about
hundreds,
now?
Hundreds, maybe thousands.
You're kidding? You haven't eaten them? I'll bring them in for you. When's your birthday, Judy?
What a nice gift that would be.
I don't celebrate anymore, but thanks.
Those are moldy milk balls.
Mmm. All right. Ro and Anna, we'll talk to them next. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.